and I think that we've learned a lot over the last couple of years about what is the way to optimize the input of folks, and I think you'll see in the configuration going forward that we will be tapping your expertise in a coordinated and very valuable way, and it will also be a great opportunity for you to hear what is going on in the department and for us to have a robust real-time exchange about what we know and how we can help. For starters today, I guess Damon is going to give us an overview, and then I think after that, the one thing we talked about, maybe we do it now, that I want to make sure that everyone in the room recognizes the depth of expertise of the folks in the room. And maybe, Damon, maybe that would be helpful for us to go a little bit deeper. I know we just did introductions, but go around a little bit more and maybe give a paragraph about what you do and how it relates to the working group. So with everyone's permission, maybe I'll start again. And so I'm Justine Carr. I'm Chief Medical Officer for Steward Healthcare. We are a community-based healthcare delivery system that comprises 10 hospitals and 2,700 physicians in Eastern Mass. We were one of the first pioneers and also part of the Blue Cross AQC program. So we're a program that is very much focused on total medical expense as opposed to fee-for-service. And I have lived experience on many aspects, meaningful use being my most consuming lately, Paul. I'm leaving, so it doesn't really matter. Vicki.
Hi. I'm a professor at UCLA in the Department of Psychology and also in Health Policy and Management. I direct a NIH health disparity study, and so we do a lot of technology-driven activities to try and get interventions to populations that are greatly in need. So, you know, we design text programs for women who have uncontrolled diabetes. We're working on another kind of totally virtual smoking cessation intervention in Korean youth. And then we do a tech collaborative with the federally qualified health centers in our area, where what we're really trying to do is to get some of our physicians to kind of think about when you give somebody some advice, you want them to exercise, you diagnose them as depressed, can we get you then to also have your care manager or some of the volunteers that we use to actually set you up with some technology that both gets information back into the care system, but as well empowers the person to be able to do work. So part of what we're really working on with those physicians is kind of what are all the collaborative tools that you can use, how can they help you improve what you're doing, and then, you know, we have a number of other types of things that we do just in the community that also revolve around the use of technology for self-help as well as kind of monitoring their health.
Paul Tang, Chief Innovation and Technology Officer for Palo Alto Medical Foundation, which is essentially a large medical group practice. In my day job, a couple of portfolios in the Innovation Center. One is on helping seniors age in community. So it's looking at the social determinants and the non-medical side of humans as they grow older. And the other piece is in using online tools to help people with chronic health conditions change your personal behavior, basically getting feedback on their own health and us being able to support them as a team member.
Joshua Rosenthal, my day job is with a company called Roadmap, kind of background, PhD, Fulbright, Servants, and Sage Revance study. Do some academic things, guest lecturing at Harvard Hopkins, MIT from time to time, around having people, you know, healthcare entrepreneurs actually building businesses that have market validity and sustainability. And so I've founded or co-founded multiple analytic companies specifically, taken each one to successful exit either through private equity or through or through strategic investment and done this, largely commercializing public data, Dartmouth Atlas, things like that, WorksOne Awards, from clinical stuff to non-clinical stuff, Entrepreneur Magazine, Business Week Innovation, stuff like that. What we do in the day job is actually a business management platform. Showed some of this from time to time. Where we basically take every public data source which has been released in any sort of meaningful way and synthesize it and put it in a nice browser and sell it to the payers and integrated networks as they actually, for the first time, don't just want to underwrite risk, but want to manage members and improve patient satisfaction. So literally every data set that we're talking about have pretty extensive technical expertise around using and business expertise around as well. And I guess if you need a thesis, like in a nutshell, public data is great. Up until now, it's been about apps. Doing these healthcare entrepreneurial boot camps, most startups fail. Most of the folks at HHS, I think, will admit we can't do it just in a nonprofit world. You need a robust public-private partnership. When they thought about releasing the data, that was really interesting. It worked well. Geolocation, weather, you know, those are real markets. Healthcare, obviously, not a real market in a lot of ways, supply driving demand, for instance. And so stuff hasn't worked as we might have hoped. And part of that has been having the people producing the data actually recognize what market drivers can actually craft policy in a sort of way. And then in terms of entrepreneurs actually using this stuff, it's really tough. It's very easy to, like, build an app, but no one wants to use it, and there's no meaningful exit around that. So having meaningful expertise using the data and building a market has been something pretty tough. So I'm very, very passionate about helping other folks be able to do that. And on the status quo side, there's a study I'm just sending to you using behavioral risk factor surveillance system data where a couple of our friends, good friends from Dartmouth Institute, showed how that out-predicts risk for Medicare Advantage instead of claims-based systems, right? Public data, high-level granularity, just smoking risk models. And so that can be very threatening to people who have system or expertise or even kind of investments around kind of archaic, I don't want to say archaic systems, but fee-for-service model systems. And so very passionate about using public data for a very specific use in the market and having a thousand flowers flourish, which hasn't quite happened yet, but I think we're at the cusp of it in a lot of ways. And I organized the tech track with Mo and helped out with Blue and doing stuff like that.
Great. Thanks, Bruce.
You're always a tough act.
Oh, Bruce, I'm sorry.
So I'm glad BRFSS is working since that's one of the units.
I know. I thought you'd love that. I'm going to send you. So, I'm going to send that out right now.
Out. So I'm a public health data geek at all levels. I started out at NCHS. I worked on Haines and NHIS. I helped author a series on statistical notes for health planners. I moved up the food chain to work at the state health department. I collect survey data. I've been chair of the IRB. I've developed a web-based data query systems. And I also work extensively in communities in the metro Boston area doing health needs assessment activities and working in a small village in Nicaragua to generate health data to address an epidemic of chronic kidney disease there. Research interests are in redefining how we measure disparities, particularly with respect to race and ethnicity, and also in reproductive technology, looking at assisted reproductive technology and the impact that has on population health. And with respect to this committee, my focus is on what I call data liberation 2.0, which is making all this information available and useful to communities.
So my name is Damon Davis. I work in the HHS Idea Lab, formerly known as the Chief Technology Officer's Office. And there we are focused on the broad innovations that will help government basically do government better, but also be better engaged with the communities who are utilizing the data that the department produces. So I always like to sort of remind folks how broad the department actually is. We are multiple operating divisions of massive agencies, National Institutes of Health, Food and Drug Administration, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, just to name a few of the big brands. And part of my job is to act as a liaison to those various operating divisions who are all engaged in multiple levels of innovative work in terms of getting data to be openly available from some of the data and from the reports and projects and grants that they administer, as well as sort of refining the data into something that can be more usable for the entrepreneurial community, more usable for the localized communities who are trying to make public health and access to health better for the people that they serve. So my job is, again, just to sort of serve as a data evangelist, both inside the department and outside the department, as well as with groups like you all who can offer some insights into how the data can be utilized better, can be made available more quickly, more efficiently. And just as a bit of additional background, I was previously in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, where I focused on communications and a little bit of our consumer e-health program, where we focused on other data elements, namely the Blue Button program, where we were trying to make sure that individuals, one, know that they have the ability or the right to gain electronic access to their personal health information, but then not only getting access to it, but actually trying to obtain it in order to be a meaningful participant in the healthcare and social services system, not just have healthcare done to you, but be participatory in your own care. So a little bit of background as to my HHS experiences.
Hi, Damon. Chris Fulcher. I serve as a co-director of a center at the University of Missouri called CARES, or Center for Applied Research and Environmental Systems. We've been around for over 20 years, focusing on GIS, or Geographic Information Systems, data visualization, and as it's evolved over the years, really much more in the area of community and community process, not just from a health perspective, but economic development, education, et cetera. So we've built a number of custom learning systems over the years for different foundations, government agencies, and nonprofits. And what we realized very quickly was that it wasn't serving communities as well as we wanted to, because we were driving people away to all these different systems. So the outgrowth of that is partnering with our nonprofit called IP3, or Institute for People, Place, and Possibility, that helps manage community commons, which is a national public good utility. So really, the conversation now is really around alignment and investments, alignment of how we collect data. As I mentioned, Damon, earlier, you know, we stand on the shoulders of what you all have created at the federal level, not just in HHS, but USDA, the Census Bureau, et cetera. So it's fantastic in terms of getting the conversation started at that community level. And invariably, they want to go beyond what's available nationally or at the federal level. What local and regional data can they lay on top of that to tell that better story about people in place? But without that federal context, the federal data sets, they're lost in so many ways, not having that underpinning there. So it's been it's an exciting journey. It's evolving with community commons and how we're working across these different funders and making more of this data available in this public utility.
Thank you.
All right. Leah Vaughn, I'm a physician, epidemiologist, public health researcher, particularly focusing on spatial temporal analysis of geospatial data. And broadly cast, I would say my areas of interest are particularly around data and technology for social good and public health impact, and most especially recently inspired by work with young people.
I'm Larry Green. I'm a physician, Denver, Colorado, chair of the NCVHS. I do projects. They're all about redesign. If Damon is a data evangelist, I'm a redesign evangelist, and I work for my grandkids.
I'm Leslie Francis. I'm both a philosopher and a lawyer. I'm distinguished professor of philosophy and of law at the University of Utah. My PhD is in philosophy. And I'm the president-elect of the Pacific Division of the APA. A lot of what I work on in philosophy is privacy and a wide variety of applied ethics issues, including environmental, actually. And I also On the law side, I mostly work on these days in various areas of health law and disability rights, and I have an NSF grant looking at the legal needs of adults with diagnoses of autism. They tend to get thought of as children, not as adults. I guess if you were going to bring it all together, my interest over my career has been in using what I've been privileged to have academically to try to further various issues of social justice. And I see public health as very much one of those.
Thank you.
Debbie Jackson. I'm with the National Center for Health Statistics, CDC. I've been able to parlay a master's degree in English to catapult into public health through the American Medical Association, some time there, the Accreditation Council on Graduate Medical Education in Chicago, and I'm a master convener.
How about that? Yes, good afternoon. This is Walter Suarez. I'm the Executive Director of Health IT Strategy and Policy for Kaiser Permanente. And in that role, I actually work significantly on various areas of health IT policy and health IT standards, and specifically areas related to electronic health record standards, administrative standards, and privacy and security, health information exchange, other things. And have a special interest in two areas that I work on. One is privacy and security, and the other one is public health and population health management. And in this last area, in this population health management area, where Kaiser has invested significant resources and funding in developing population health management tools that uses a variety of data, not just our internal enrollment and member and patient data, but also community-based data to understand better the community where our members and our patients live. So we have, of course, many, many different initiatives around health data analysis, big data analytics, and those kind of things. So all the way from the clinical space, research, clinical research, as well as applied health research, and then all the way to in population health areas and evidence-based and evidence-based medicine and comparative effectiveness research and other things like that. Oh, we are a large integrated delivery system, as our nature has been always. We operate about in about 10 different states, about 38 different hospitals, mostly in the West Coast, 600 medical facilities with over 20,000, almost 20,000 employee physicians, and covering almost 10 million members at this point. So.
On the phone, Kenyon, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Just introduce yourself and give us a paragraph or so about what you're doing and your day job.
Sure. This is Kenyon Rowley, no conflict. I'm with the University of Maryland Center for Health Information and Decision Systems, where I'm deputy director and run a research portfolio covering a range of health information technology topics focused on the adoption, effective use, evaluation of information systems in different clinical contexts, stretching from patient-facing to provider-facing. So we'll have a group of data scientists who does a lot of work in healthcare analytics. And then we also have a big focus on quality and transparency of data. I'll pause there. Thank you.
Is there anyone else on the line?
Okay. And Wendy, welcome. Sorry for being late. Wendy Nelson, and I'm from the National Institute of Health and the National Science Foundation. So I run the Smart and Connected Health Program at NSF, which is a joint NIH-NSF venture to really kind of bring the smart technology to health broadly defined. At NIH, I'm in the Office of Behavioral and Social Sciences Research, and I lead many of our initiatives in mobile health, so in ways to thinking of it from the clinic all the way out to empowering health in the community, as well as data collection and aggregation.
Excellent.
Thank you. That was helpful.
Yeah, very, very rich and diverse.
Because, you know, some of the things that I always forget is, you know, you guys are here participating as, you know, volunteers, and you're volunteering your time away from a day job. And I, you know, I really do appreciate the fact that I can offer some insights as to what we're trying to accomplish, but then hear your very perspectives so I understand where you're coming from. So thank you. That was a great idea, Jesse. Over to me?
Yes, sir.
Fair enough. Okay. So this is Damon Davis. I am going to walk us through a little bit of an update as to where our work is at the CTO level with regard to our Open Health Data Initiative. So I commonly refer to it as the HDI, the Health Data Initiative, which you will see on this first slide here. I'll just remind everybody quickly that one of the things that happened back in November of 2013 was we released a strategy for our HDI execution plan. It's a HDI strategy and execution plan. And in that strat and execution plan, we had basically five overarching goals that we wanted to make sure to focus on. So what I'm going to talk through today is a little bit of a sort of progress report as to where I feel we are with some of these initiatives. So to remind everybody what those five goals are, the first of which is advancing the healthdata.gov platform. We want to make sure that the site is both user-friendly but user-functional. We want to go ahead and try to highlight departmental assets that support achieving HHS strategic initiatives. So in recognition of the fact that the department has its own strategic agenda and a publicly stated strat plan, we want to make sure that the data liberation activities that we are focused on are actually very much aligned with that strategic plan. We want to educate new and existing and internal and external participants in the health data ecosystem. And it's important to recognize the distinctions between each of these audiences because they are varied, but there are some similarities across each. So recognizing that there will be newcomers to the platform healthdata.gov, as well as existing or veteran users who are constantly looking for additional resources or data. But there are also internal and external users of HHS data. One of my one of the fun projects that I've been lucky to be engaged in is sort of building out the healthdata.gov blog, and one of the stories that I very much like to tell is not just about how the innovative entrepreneurial community might be utilizing the data, but how the department itself is using its own data. And I find that it's really, really interesting when you start to talk to people across the department about the activities that they're engaged in, when they start to say, oh, well, the Agency for Health Research and Quality uses this CMS data set for, you know, the Monarch system, for example. And it's really nice to start to see those cross-collaborations. So that's another, that's the internal side. The external side, I think, probably speaks for itself given our close proximity to the recent Health Data Palooza. We want to enable and incentivize the health data ecosystem. So there's certainly a portion of what we're trying to accomplish that is making the data available, but we also want to enable people and incentivize them to come to the platform, look for additional data sets that are now available, but also make suggestions about what could be made available, how it could be made available in a different format, et cetera. And we want to also implement administration and departmental policies that foster data openness. And so clearly the White House has made some decisions that are affecting all departments of the government in terms of initiating their own open data journeys. We were very fortunate to have the dynamic Todd Park as our chief technology officer prior to his arrival at the White House. And what that afforded us was an opportunity to get out in front of many of these efforts. So we are lucky to be somewhat heralded as one of the leading edge agencies in terms of our open data agenda. However, that doesn't mean that there aren't other policy considerations that we have to make. And then there's also the internal policy considerations that we need to make. For example, how is it that we make sure that open data is, in fact, something that's going to be institutionalized and not simply some, you know, flash in the pan fad that will go away for some reason that we are not able to predict. So those are some overarching ideas as to what it is that we're going to try to accomplish with our strategic and execution plan. Again, It's available online at healthdata.gov on the blog. You can search for morbidly execution, and you will find that blog quite quickly, but it does come up, and it's pretty rich in terms of the different activities that we'd like to be engaged in. So I'll just drive into each one of these different goals quickly and give you a little bit of a progress report on each. You'll forgive me for reading from some notes as I try to make sure to hit some of the points. But one of the things that we're trying to accomplish under advancing the healthdata.gov website is improving the quality of metadata for better usability. I'll just maybe read through each of these kind of quickly to help you understand, especially for those on the phone who may not be able to see slides. The areas under advancing the platform are improving the metadata quality, an area of the platform for non-HHS data sets, creating some user feedback loops, and developing and publicizing the ability to store and host HHS data, as well as improving sort and search. So within each of these domains, I'll just highlight some of the activities that have happened very quickly. In terms of metadata quality, this is in progress, but unfortunately, I feel like we could be doing a little bit better. One of the challenges, I think, is just the recognition that this is a very, very large agency, and metadata quality is just going to have to start somewhere and build out from there. I think it's also very important to recognize that there are a small cadre of people working on this, and it is a very, very large behemoth of a task. Metadata is by no means an easy thing to tackle, so we're going to need a little bit of time. But one of the things that we're trying to do is build in some of the templated language, the common core metadata fields that will at least drive new data sets towards a little bit better metadata going forward. An area of the platform for non-HHS data sets is in progress, and we've been making some significant progress there. Pardon me. My colleague Serena Parks in the back of the room and I have been working diligently to reach out to various states and localized entities with the desire to make healthdata.gov not just a discovery zone for HHS data sets, but a discovery zone for health data sets in the public domain writ large, and predominantly from .gov sites. But there are opportunities for us to take data from other resources, and we will explore that at a later date. But just to sort of recap what we've done so far, we've got 9 states who are federating data into healthdata.gov right now. Illinois, New York, Missouri, Hawaii, Maryland, Colorado, Oklahoma, Washington, and Oregon are currently sharing data or have federated their data catalog into healthdata.gov. But part of the strategy has been to think through not only just where can we find states, but let's think strategically about where we can have an impact. So one of the things that I decided to do was in recognition of my inability to reach out to 50 states. I decided to focus on the top 10 most populous states, and hopefully in the wake of that activity, we would bring along other smaller states who would be interested in open data too. So currently, Serena and I are focused on Texas, Florida, and California. Obviously, there are other states in the mix, but that's just a brief update on those. Soon, we will have some United Kingdom data sets as well. So a quick just tidbit, the HHS has a memorandum of understanding with NHS England. We've been working through a couple of different work streams as a part of that MOU. I would say more about that at a later time, but just know that one of the work streams is open data, and we have decided to focus on obesity data as one domain of data sharing so that we can start to have some collaborations in terms of understanding obesity in each of the two nations, as well as encouraging some entrepreneurial endeavors in those areas. I spoke a little bit about other federal entities having their data be made available as well, and so I think it's important to recognize that health data does not just reside at HHS. Health data is available out of the Department of Education, the USDA, and many, many other places where health is a consideration as part of the mission of that department. So we've been trying to figure out the different avenues through which we can get some health data from other agencies, and so just recognize that some other federal entities are going to appear on healthdata.gov as well. In considering the user feedback loops, we've been thinking through just generally how is it that we can start to more efficiently interact with communities? How do we engage with communities that already exist? And when I say community, I mean communities not so much in the localized geographical term as I do in the entrepreneurial space, in the clinical use of data space. So communities who are utilizing health data is how I'm using that term. So there are some feedback loops internally where with the operating divisions that I previously mentioned, we have what's called a health data leads group. And that health data leads group are my direct liaisons into each one of those operating divisions. And what they've done in many cases is set up their own health data leads group in recognition of the breadth of their own agency. And so what I'm alluding to is a feedback loop that basically suggests that the internal operators are actually trying to actively and proactively seek out data resources from across their various operating divisions. But we also want to utilize the platform in order to create the ability to ask questions about data you already see, offer up ideas for data that you would like to see, and generally just create the ability to have a conversation about the data in whatever way the public sees fit. We want to also develop and publicize the ability to store HHS data and host it for other entities. So, for example, there are some small elements of various operating divisions that don't necessarily have a budget for data storage, but they've got an awesome project that they're really, really interested in sharing the data from. If we can create some level of efficiency for them by offering an IT solution that will allow them to share their data, create an automatic API into that data, but not necessarily have to go through the contract mechanisms that would require them to set up, say, a centralized data store or what have you, we can potentially offer some efficiencies there. So the platform is going to be built out in those varied ways. One last thing, improving sort and search. We have not yet started the improvement of sort and search, but I think it coincides with the metadata piece where we're building out better keywords and things along those lines associated with the data sets. Moving on to the next slide, highlighting departmental assets that support achieving HHS strategic goals. We've been working internally on sort of drafting a definition of what a strategically relevant data set is. We've sort of coined the acronym SRDA. You're not a good fed if you don't have an acronym attributed to your work here. So I feel like part of my work here is done now that I have this acronym. But I think it's really important to recognize that this is something I would love to talk with this group about more fully. So please put an asterisk by it or whatever. And at some point on a future date, I would love to figure out if, in fact, this is a worthy action for us to undertake. So just to build it out a little bit, what I'm thinking through is we have tons and tons of data. You know, people are going to evangelize for the utilization of all kinds of different data sets. I am of the opinion, at least currently, that it might be very, very good for at least a communications and marketing and sort of outreach campaign type thing to say, here are the data sets that are relevant to our strategic mission. Here's where you can find them, and give people additional education about that group of data in order to create a larger conversation about other and alternative data uses. So currently I'm engaged with my health data leads to a small degree with the idea of defining what a strategically relevant data set is, and then we're going to march down the pathway toward making those strategically relevant data assets more widely known. So mark that in your mind as something that we should come back to, because I'd love to hear whether you think it's a worthwhile action or and some of the different ways that you think that this could be a valuable activity. We want to further drive greater data openness. I would argue that while we have set the default for some of our data to open, there are a lot of people on the line level who are administering the grants and doing the reports and all kinds of things who sort of have heard of open data but may not necessarily understand their direct space in HHS as a proponent for open data. I think we want to further drive the openness. We are still releasing reports with PDFs, and, you know, I've got an issue that I'm working right now that we got from Twitter where someone said, this is great that you got this report, but hello, can I have the data? And so I think that we still have a little bit of a ways to go in actually truly having the default setting be openly available data. We want to work with each HHS division on external outreach and external outreach to broad as well as targeted specific ecosystem participants. So, you know, the Health Data Palooza is a perfect example of the broad, I think. It's everybody from, you know, clinical users to researchers to the media, entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that there are going to be times across our work where we're going to want to reach out specifically to some targeted audiences to help them understand what data is available, how it can be utilized for their various needs, and then get feedback from them as to how we can advance that cause. There have been some great educational resources coming out of various entities across HHS, and I would categorize that both in this highlighting our departmental assets as well as in our next section, which is education and outreach. The next thing I want to do is increase traffic to healthdata.gov as a discovery zone. And I think that one is pretty obvious. It's a great resource, but if we're not talking about the fact that the resource is there, and I mean we, as in we, the collective in this room and on the phone, we are doing the data a little bit of a disservice by making it freely and openly available. So we want to increase the richness of the blog content that's coming out. Talk about not just HHS data activities, but data activities that are transpiring across the nation. If people are using the data for a challenge, or if people are just setting up a challenge that is going to meet some public health need, we want to help amplify that message. One of the things that I've been trying to encourage folks to do is not just post a data set, but actually post a data set and post a blog about the availability of that data set. So we now have something to tweet about that then creates this broader communications channel that directs people to the utilization of the data. So again, the broad outreach about how we can drive people to be engaged with healthdata.gov is going to be another valuable component of what I think this group can offer opinions on. And I'm going to go ahead and advance to the next slide, which is educating new and existing internal and external participants. I should just say I am happy to take questions. So you guys should not just let me run. If you see something you want to ask about, please jump in. So let me just pause for a quick moment. Great. Chris, go.
Yes. With SRDAs, that's fantastic in terms of from an HHS standpoint. Do you see that happening in a similar vein across the other federal agencies in terms of elevating those strategic data sets? And how are you quantifying which ones are the strategic? I know that's premature, that part. But
it's a good question for us to think through. So, one, this is it's an experiment. We're going to see if it's even worthwhile. When we do it, does it yield anything? It may not. It may be that there is increased traffic to those data assets on the various catalog platforms such that we can give some measure of whether this was a worthwhile activity. Again, I don't know if this is successful and we can tout it as a success. It may be that this is then cookie-cuttered into other departments to help them with their own open data communications and marketing, quote-unquote, strategy. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the feedback from this group is, what we decide internally, and how we mash it all up into an approach that's going to be meaningful for defining and actually highlighting these strategically relevant data assets. But I'm really excited to see what's going to happen because if nothing else, if it fails, we will have learned that is not, you know, and that's sort of a tenet of the Idea Lab is let's have some experimentation and figure out what's going to work and doesn't work and learn something from it. So I'm excited to get some learnings from this.
Would that be something that we can be kept up?
Absolutely.
How would that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd be happy to update the group through any proper channel that deems appropriate. I'm happy to come back to this meeting on a recurring basis. But I would love to have that feedback loop. And this goes back to what I was talking about previously.
I would just say one other thing. You're already penciled in for every meeting starting just like this because this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, it's also true that if you have something that is time sensitive, we can pull a call together and
mm-hmm.
just kind of give you some quick feedback. I think this group is brilliantly potent.
This group has been fantastic for me before in terms of the sort of feedback that we had on our it wasn't the strategic plan, but there was another document that was sent around, and very quickly we got some really good feedback, so I appreciate that. I think Bruce and then
How have you built in a mechanism for ongoing community feedback for these efforts?
So that is something that is still under development, and I will also need the consideration of this group in order to do so. So you know, frequently when we go out, we'll talk about healthdata.gov and the ideas tab and the Q&A tab and encourage feedback to come through some of those formal online feedback loops. But we don't have necessarily, in my opinion, some of the strong recurring community feedback that we probably would like. And that is as much a function of sort of realizing where we need to prioritize outreach and feedback to having the resources to even handle it. I mean, you know, currently Greg, Serena, and myself are the predominant people who are engaged with healthdata.gov from this level. And I think it's challenging from a resource allocation perspective. But that's not to say that it has to necessarily come through us. You know, if you've got a group, say OpenFDA, if you've got people that are very interested in the FDA data set, that community doesn't need to come to us. They can go straight to those guys. I'd love to know what's happening just because I think there could be some fantastic stories and interesting information coming out of there. But that is but one of many challenges I think that we face is the continual community engagement. Walter. Oh, sorry, Josh. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Three quick questions. One on metadata, one on usefulness versus usability, and one on structure versus unstructured. All right, so metadata. A lot of important things goes into metadata, and one of them is certainly data provenance. And so if you could speak a little more about the work that is being done to pursue standardization on that. I know ONC, for example, has a initiative that applies to clinical health information and other information that focuses on data provenance and codifying data provenance mm-hmm. as part of the metadata.
Mm-hmm.
So that it will be interesting to know how that element on the metadata is being captured and what it can tell us about mm-hmm. the source. The second question is about you mentioned usability in the first slide. You actually mm-hmm. mentioned it like three times. But has there been work done to evaluate and to perhaps identify a way to document the usefulness of the data rather than the usability of the data? And then the third question about structure versus unstructured. The sense, of course, is that most, if not all, of this data is somehow structured data. In other words, data that is coded and has some coding
mm-hmm.
that can be analyzed through computable mechanisms. And how much of the data exists in unstructured way, in unstructured form? Unstructured meaning basically non-coded form, like notations or pretext or other things that are not really coded information.
Yeah.
I wonder about that.
So I'll start at the top, work my way down. Metadata and data provenance. So I immediately think of the example of sort of research data out of NIH. So one of our, we'll get to the policy slide at a later time, but one of the things that we're going to need to do is more strongly consider how we're looking at federally funded research data. And, you know, there's the idea of sort of the publication in PubMed, but there's the data sets that go behind the actual utility of that report and basically the proof of the hypothesis and the research. One of the challenges then is as that data becomes available for broader use, how do you attribute that data back to that research based on what that individual, you know, grant and researcher did. So therein lies one of our challenges that we're currently considering is how do we get to a place where we can better align the data that has been produced with the activity that produced it so that you can have more of a direct lineage from, you know, some of its multiple alternative after uses or subsequent uses back to its origination.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a specific answer as much as that is something that we're working on. In terms of documenting the usefulness of the data, it made me think of an issue that I brought up with Greg recently where we were trying to think through what it would mean to actually put, say, a rating system literally on healthdata.gov that would say, you know, data openness, for example. You know, if this is a PDF, it gets a 1. You know, if this is a XML, CSV, or something, or an API, you're moving into the 3s, 4s, and 5s. And so I would liken that to a data usefulness type rating, with the assumption that anything that makes it into an API or CSV-type format has gone through some level of additional work that would make it usable in that type of format. So I'm hopeful that that we'll figure out a way to do something along those lines.
Before you go to the next one, on that point, I think that's still talking about the usability, how usable
mm-hmm.
is the data. In other words, if it's really a rated one level
mm-hmm.
data where the data is PDF and it's not coded or computable, then it's – but that still is usability.
Yeah, I understand
it's
that.
Not so much usefulness as in the other end of the spectrum, which is, has this data demonstrated that it's valuable and it, by the user, it helps them achieve the goals of using the data.
That's how would you get to it, man? Like, can you think of an example?
Well, there are actually – in some ways, examples of how to grade, if you will, or at least associate the degree to which some data is more useful to achieve certain goals than other data.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what I was getting to. It's
mm-hmm.
really, sometimes putting out data there just for the lack of putting it, for the interest of putting it out there,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that the data is useful. I think it could be as usable as anybody can
mm-hmm.
do it. But
you can make an API into something that nobody
creating
wants.
Creating some level of expectation or understanding that while this data is out there and is usable, its utility, its usefulness to achieve a particular goal might be limited.
If you could, would you send me an example of what you mean?
Sure.
I understand conceptually, but I'd just like to see an example because I'm having a hard time.
I'm taking the chair's prerogative to jump the line for a second.
Sure.
Because I think one example, we've talked a lot about this, and we think that we'll get to the number by having a construct of usefulness, but I actually think that let the data speak for itself, and how many times was this data used in a data set could be one example of the usefulness of
mm-hmm.
it, that the frequency of using it
mm-hmm.
I think would be a starting point and would be very helpful.
Yeah, Josh is dying to get in. I'm just going to say
I'm going to say one thing
on that. There's lots of nodding heads over there. But I guess the thing that I'm thinking of is, don't forget that there's no anything on healthdata.gov. Predominantly, the things on healthdata.gov are free and openly available. And so part of our challenge, I think, is an inability to even know where the data went and how it was utilized until something like the Health Data Palooza comes up where people say, hey, talk about me on stage because I'm using this data in the following way. And so my point is I think we have a lack of information about how usable it is because we have a lack of information about where it's being used. And that's kind of by design. Like, take it, do great stuff with it. But I think then – so that's kind of why I'm pushing you for a specific example, because I'm not sure how we could get to that given our current model of freely and open available and not attributable. Josh.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Wait, I left
that
one.
No.
Structured versus unstructured?
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer for you on that, so I'd love to talk with you more. Josh, go.
Yeah, there's hey, just real quick, this is basically just fantastic. I'm thinking about, when we started this like 2-3 years
yeah,
ago. I mean, now when we say into metadata, we're not doing kind of 101 what we mean. Now we're getting into structured versus unstructured. I mean,
mm-hmm.
This is brilliant. This is brilliant progress. And even the Health Data Palooza is like an example of that on a number of different levels, just from doing something cool with an app, meaningful usefulness in addition to utility. So a couple different things. We can dig out some of the work. We did this, you and I did this, around kind of 9 different ways you can consider very quickly and inexpensively using kind of open source like mechanisms on .gov
mm-hmm.
to basically generate kind of user feedback or user loops
mm-hmm.
with typology. You see it in direct-to-consumer stuff all the time, kind of top-down and bottom-up. So some of it just by counts,
mm-hmm.
some of it by breadcrumbs,
mm-hmm.
some of it by like basic learning center or commentary around it. And so there's ways, there are like mechanisms that you can implement pretty quickly and easily for capturing some of that stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I won't bore you with the details. We actually have some documents
yeah.
that we can dig back up for you.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Kind of thinking about like utility versus usefulness, like from an HHS that falls into kind of ranking by strategy for policy implementation, given strategic direction, some of like
different functional vectors of what I call top-down with what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and then some other ways to capture some of the bottom-up, and not just kind of breadcrumbs, but even, you know, user clicks, user feedback, basic rating, like ask your user base how useful was it, not how easy was it to utilize, but how useful was it. And if you think about doing, like, basic learning center type stuff, and, like, blog is a good, you know, cut at that.
Yeah.
But instead of just kind of going into Twitter where it disappears in a stream, someplace where it's, like, archived with a little bit of metadata, actually having the content metadata match some of this either top-down or bottom-up metadata for the data elements themselves is, like, a really interesting way to kind of connect that. So we can go through the details of how to do that.
Yeah.
If you want to see, like, examples of that. The other thing I was going to say was one thing that does, so metadata, like when we did the start of this 2-3 years ago, we were saying, hey, what's metadata? Is it important? Yes, it is for these reasons. All right, can we retroactively kind of go through current data sets that are important? Well, we should prioritize which data sets are important so we know where to focus metadata efforts, and then come up with some sort of template standard typology. It doesn't have to be UDF, but something reasonable for new data sets.
Mm-hmm.
Like bake that into API, you know, type machine-readable language. The other thing I think is worth kind of considering is, how regular will the stuff be? So, like, now that we're kind of, we've moved past a bunch of kids, you know, typing out an app and, like, the Apple Store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now that you're actually asking, you know, entities to make investments, whether it's public, private, or, you know, social good, or even just, like, market generation, if we hit a set, like, is it going to come out again, right?
Mm-hmm.
What frequency? And I know some of that's dependent upon allocation and things along that nature, and so you don't have clear answers into that. But after metadata comes, you know, what's the life cycle or repeatability of a data element?
The periodicity of its
production. I'm not speaking for me. This is one thing that comes up very, very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So hospital compared grade, everybody goes nuts for it. Is it coming out next year?
Yeah.
Maybe it is. You know, physician cost, right? It makes headlines, outlier reporting. You want to move past outlier reporting. Do we invest in it? Is it going to come out again?
Yeah.
Like market questions.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. Yeah, it does. And it's one of the things that we've also been considering is, quite literally, when you go to healthdata.gov, you know, it'll say, here's this great data from 2010. You know, okay, well, that's really awesome for back then. But, like, you know, there's a little bit more data I'd be very, very interested in. And so one of the things that we've been actually trying to do is go around to our various operating divisions and say, hey, listen, I see this data set out here, and it's got 6 years of data, but it seems to fall off in 2011. Like, can we get the next 3 years of data? And they've been very responsive because they recognize, you know, wow, we look kind of silly having a stream of data that's not actually up-to-date and current. And they appreciate us sort of proactively helping them along. But I think I like what you said about it sort of inspiring confidence for you guys to say, oh, I see, this will be coming out again. This is a resource that's...
It doesn't have to be the whole ocean, but particularly if you start saying what data sets are strategically important, maybe kind of starting with those.
Yeah.
We can go through the mechanisms we did, but they sort of answer Bruce's question and Walter's question. You know, there are pretty easy ways that you can do kind of bottom-up utilization, like cut it by community or cut it by developer or cut it by business or public, whatever you want to do, that don't require a lot of curation on your guys' So we can go through that at a later time.
Yeah.
Stuff
that's an interesting point, though. I mean, you basically created the cross-section between the strategic relevance of a data set and its periodicity such that you can create a more meaningful description of the data, its reliability, et cetera.
If you tie it into metadata that way, if you do any posts or kind of, you know, if you basically said for every challenge we do, if we're going to give away some money for kids or entities doing this, that, or the other thing, maybe part of the requirement is you have to post what happened, what did you learn, how are you using that data set in the learning center, right? How do you build, like, a learning asset over time? And you have mechanisms at your disposal to be able to do that. So
that makes sense. I'm going
to
take, who's next, Vicky or Bruce, and then we should probably move on, so in the interest of time.
Leslie.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
One's a comment, and then the other one is I'm going to pick up on the NIH. You know, one of the things that's very exciting is to hear that you're doing data agreements with other countries.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'd love to recommend is to consider doing a data agreement with a country that has cradle-to-grave data, because we don't.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability for us to be able to look at someone else's data on obesity or whatever it is, and it has, you know, cradle-to-grave has unique identifiers so that they follow them over time, would be very useful particularly for like the NIH science, because then you really have a much better sense of what it is you should zero in on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very cost effective
mm-hmm.
to be able to use another data set and then, you know, to do what we need to do in
yeah.
the U.S.
One of the challenges that I think we already foresee in utilizing some international data, though, is that there are different thresholds for various things. So in obesity, even if you just started at childhood obesity, a child in the U.S. could be, you know, I don't know, 0 to 13 or whatever it is. And then in the U.K. it could be 0 to 14 and 15. And so, and then there's different, you know, thresholds for what obesity is actually considered from a, literally from your BMI and weight, body weight perspective. So, sure. So it's important for us to consider, you know, like there's obviously the sort of awesome and fun consideration of what it would be like to have alternative data sets from international agencies on healthdata.gov, but we also have to think about the actual utility of the data in terms of making it meaningfully understandable. So.
Another is about NIH, and that is there is this issue in terms of when you think about your SRDA. In NIH, they have, because it's organized by disease, they have a very specific
number. What? Yeah, again, I've taken mine off, so mine's not here.
I heard it. I didn't hear it until after Vicki turned on her mic, so.
Turn it here.
It's mine. Yeah, it's the mic.
It might be the mic.
I think this mic and the other mic's over.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry, Vicki.
Clinical diagnosis.
Yeah.
Right.
If you wouldn't mind, just starting your
only correlation.
Yeah.
Your comment again.
We can do it here.
The NIH.
But anyway, it's like each unit, or I'm sorry, each institute is kind of disease driven, and so each of us that get funding from each institute, if it's at a certain level, we have to develop our own data sets to make public. So I'm sure you've heard that, and then we each have to spend money or find a way. What NIH is starting to do, which I think is absolutely great, is that when you put results out now in terms of their big studies, they want the infographics to go with it. So it's like, okay, you publish this data in a journal, that's great. But they want people at a very different level to be able to use that. But again, it's like, where are they going to get the positive besides just on the NIH website? So there's a lot of richness that's there in terms of what, you know, what one can build on. But without any instructions, you know, we each throw up our data sets. We each do it our own way, and we deposit them probably at the University of Michigan or other places.
Yep.
But I think, there's a lost opportunity.
Yeah, and I would imagine there's some, you know, there's clearly going to be some duplicative efforts towards data generation. And this goes back to Walter's comment about data provenance. If you can figure out where data originated from, what it was collected and curated for, and then figure out if you have an alternative use that fits within the confines of that data and its creation, you know, you basically could eliminate a significant portion of your upfront cost and effort in order to simply reuse the data that someone else has produced. And so, you know, I often like to say, you know, data can be, people look at data through a different lens, right? You and I are going to see the same data set from two completely different perspectives, and I think that it's important for us to start to expand the ability of the research or entrepreneurial community to say, that's really great you use that data for this, but it would really be awesome if I could repurpose it over here for that. So go ahead, Josh.
It's just a quick question, like on that line, I mean, has even NIH, even outside of .gov, given any thought around, you know, kind of requirement, not just making data available, but even metadata models, right? Like, if you're working on a data set, you have an ERD somewhere, and that's not PHI. I mean, that's in a direct-to-consumer model, the first thing you look for is ERD, right? So, you know, it may not solve all your problems, but it's going to solve 80% of them, right? And it's not a top-down standard like Walter's working on where we're going to, like, hammer this out. If you basically say this is the best practice of an ERD for this type of data, like, that's tended to work really, really efficiently in other markets. Is there any, you know, back to the learning center thing, that might be some of the stuff, not just metadata, but even ERDs. But in terms of kind of controlling it from finances, is there any thought to that kind of strategically on the NIH side?
Yeah,
again, it's the same question that NSF to create huge data sets.
Yeah, so if you're gonna put out a set, like, I mean, so you've done it through legislation, like anything getting funding has to be machine readable. And so, like, to Bruce's point, like, you know, open data, data liberation 2.0 means, like, not just machine readable, but like an ERD, right? It's on some analyst's desktop somewhere. I or someone else has to, or a researcher has to literally recreate it from scratch. You're wondering why it's like chicken wire. It's because, like, literally, I can't, any other industry I can go in and find standard ERDs all over the place, and not like top down, but what people tend to be using. And it's so simple, and the work's already there. You can put it out on a PDF, even. You don't even have to do a Visio diagram.
Yeah. This is Kenny. Can I have a comment, please?
Sure.
Sure, go ahead.
I love the conversation. I think with the regression on data stuff, that's great. I commend you and your team, Damon. I think the learning committee aspect is actually right on in trying to put these assets together to the committee. And I'll just add one quick point to the ERD discussion. I think in addition to an ERD, you get data dictionary, just so you know what the fields are, know what the fields mean in the context they're being used with other sort of dates and for descriptive information with that data. So there is, I know most data sets, there's a descriptive paragraph of it, but to have the ERD along with the data dictionary would be a big value to us many researchers.
Got it, Ken.
Don't tie it on to funding. I mean, one way to affect that is by tying it to funding.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is just policy. I mean, just literally, we made it machine readable as a requirement, right?
Yeah.
Legislation, like, that's great for healthcare, but, I mean, this is not, that's 80% of the work.
One of the considerations, especially for the new data sets that are being produced, but less for those that are, so we've got existing contract vehicles and grants and things along those lines, but those are going to take a heavy lift to go back and say, from this point forward, this has to be machine readable. But clearly there's an opportunity for everything from this point forward to say we need to have open data as a byproduct of this activity, but that's also going to require that there is some actual specific language in the contract or grant or whatever the mechanism is to say, here's what we mean. You know, it can't be open-ended or else, you know, X contractor is going to do the minimum viable product in order to produce a data set that needs to be further produced into something usable. So, thank you.
And I would just add to that, Steve, you can say that, but also having the contractor specify how they will communicate to submit data, how they are ensuring that they're making it usable for the community, and then have them, you know, and then that way they're starting to compete on how usable they make the data for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point as well. All right, let me get through the last few slides here. I don't know. How much time do I have left? Probably over?
We tend to be unstructured.
very good.
I know we have two presentations today, so I want to be respectful of that. And we also are going to have a visit from Karen DeSalvo, I think.
Did she confirm she's going to be able to make it?
At 3:30.
Yeah, she's going to be
30.
Is she great?
Yeah.
All right. So I will just make a slight adjustment. We have one. I'm sorry, I didn't see your comments over here. We have at least one. Is Kate Brett in? Yes, she is here. So we have one presentation today. We were going to have two. So the schedule is further malleable than you might have thought.
Really briefly, to loop back into, I think, an earlier conversation we've had, to point you to the really excellent work of the Federal Geographic Data Committee that has a great deep dive of public, private, multi-agency commitment to metadata that has been was a very long and excruciating process, but has come out the other end with something that's quite elegant and robust, and to see what might be taken from that rather than to completely look at reinventing the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
The other is to share with you a comment that at a civic data meetup that I participated in locally, where one of the technologists was very interested to hear about, had comments about data.gov and healthdata.gov, and apparently had tried to contact the data steward that was listed and found that those were a lot of dead links. So he's made it his personal project to summarize all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to share that with me. I'll pass it along.
Thank you.
But it points to, again, kind of what can we build into the infrastructure of sure people are going to move on and whatever. Is there a more general way of assigning how people in the future will follow on those data sets?
Yeah, it's an interesting point because that goes back to a prior point we were making. I don't recall what the subject was, but the bottom line is sort of reducing the confidence in the platform. If you know you're going to go there, have an issue, expect to put in a comment and nobody's going to respond, like, why would you ever go back to that platform if you know, if you don't think anybody's paying attention? And so we do have to make sure and try to ensure that the public email addresses and the contact folks are actually going to an email box that is actively sort of taken care of.
Christopher? I mean, that's kind of jumping in, but the company gets really exciting, but they don't. Even with the response time, I mean, having a structure, a certain level of customer service community, right? So maybe it's all responses are in 48 hours or 24 hours. But so you start enforcing certain standards of service and community. Now, I mentioned, too, the way that OpenSSL
opinion is really difficult to understand
is with the Stack Overflow model. So within the OpenSSL link, they've created this community and have conversations about how to use new SDA side, and the community has already started to create discussions around that. So since that's already within an HHS agency being used in order to keep sort of consistency across the department, we may consider sort of using that model that OpenSSL is using.
I heard about 75% of what you said. I'm sorry,
yeah,
Kenyon.
It's a little bit broken up. If you're on a speakerphone, can you go on a handset? If you're on a handset mobile, can you go on a landline?
Also, if he has a volume control on his side,
turn your volume control down on your side.
Can you hear me better now? Sorry about that. I'm in the
hi,
Los Angeles.
Yeah, you sound better in the room.
Can you hear me better?
Yeah, try it again, please.
Better.
Okay, just briefly, I was just saying in order to facilitate this community discussion, the way the OpenSDA seems to be doing it, I've used this already, is the Stack Overflow model. So directly from the OpenSDA site, if you have questions about the use and functionality, they push you to Stack Overflow and you start asking questions about it, and there have already discussions starting about how to improve the experience, what data is available. And since that's within HHS already, you want to keep sort of consistency in how different departments are creating the community discussions for the data assets, we might consider something similar.
That's a good idea. You know, one of the things that I took away from my experience in ONC was we were trying to figure out how to build communities around Blue Button and other things, and we kept going round and round about how are we going to get people to healthit.gov at the time. And we realize it's not necessarily about bringing folks to us. It's about going where people are so you can have the conversation there. And if Stack Overflow is a commonly sort of referenced or utilized platform through which we can get some robust feedback, conversations, et cetera, then that perhaps is what we need to do. So I appreciate the comment, Kenyon. Thank you. All right. I'm going to proceed with slides because if you would just hold your question, I'm going to keep going. Otherwise, we may never get through this. So to continue with status, I'm moving now to the educating new and existing, yes, internal and external participants slide. So spotlighting the value of openly available health data to healthcare transformations is in progress. This is something that we've been working on in terms of thinking through how data is being utilized in, say, the ACO models, for example, or how data is being utilized, once again, through those entrepreneurs and innovators that made themselves present at the Health Data Palooza. So the idea being really shining a light on the fact that some of these innovations are, in fact, driven by open data, and we need to tout that as a success. We want to increase the percentage of machine-readable data sets on the platform. We've already somewhat alluded to the fact that we've got tons of PDFs and other formats, but we really do want to focus on the fact that these data sets need to be made available in machine-readable formats. People are spending time, money, and other resources to try to take data that they cannot just get, and they are literally doing manual or some level of plain language automated processing to get data into some machine-readable format. And the fact is that's a waste of time because the data came from somewhere. So making that data source openly available after, you know, appropriate privacy and security measures are taken is incredibly important. But all of my health data leads are being repeatedly asked to consider at least at, the high level, what are your annual reports? What are your semi-annual reports? What are the things that you already know on the calendar are coming? Let us consider the process for making that output machine-readable from this point forward. So So that is a recurring refrain. And you can imagine it's great for me to say and for them to hear, but there are resources that have to go into making that something that's going to actually happen. However, it is that's a set of targets that we can obviously have. We know that annual report is coming out. There's no reason we shouldn't be considering the availability of that data down the line. We want to continue to expand our external outreach. That is also in progress. A great example of that is actually something that Jim Craver did at the NCHS, where he put together a Codecademy learning session on the data assets that are available out of the Health Indicators Warehouse. So that's a great example of going where the community is, providing an educational resource, and letting people run with it. And, you know, it's my understanding that if we're going to sort of evaluate how well that has been received, I would be interested in having other operating divisions do something along those lines. And we do have goals in the strategic and execution plan for producing educational resources that people can utilize in the same way. So we've also been trying a lot to be out on the speaking circuit, and it may not sound like that's a sort of relevant approach, but you'd be kind of surprised how many people don't actually know that healthdata.gov even exists or the fact that there are data resources there and available. So when we start to talk through this strategy that I'm presenting to you today, more at a high level, less at the granular progress report level, they're really interested, and you get a lot of questions coming back. So people, you know, sort of underestimate how important it is for the speaking circuit to be worked, but it's a valuable resource because people are coming to those conferences to walk away with information like what we have to provide. So I would encourage you, as you're out on the speaking circuit, to also refer to healthdata.gov as an opportunity for folks to find resources that they may be able to utilize. We talked a little bit in the strategy about developing use cases and internal marketing to enhance HHS's workforce engagement and to continue this culture shift towards open data. That's not something I've had any time to really focus on. One thing that I will tell you is that there's an easy sort of quote-unquote win. HHS has an internal sort of, for lack of a better word, social network called Yammer, where basically there are thousands and thousands of HHS employees who are engaged in this online platform, and you can literally say, hey, I need a PowerPoint expert for blah, blah, blah. And someone from across the country or in another part of the division or right down the hall will say, I can help you. Give me a call. And so you get this really interesting mashup of all kinds of people coming together that you wouldn't even meet at the cooler, let alone in the cafeteria. These are people that are geographically diversely located. And my point in bringing that up is it's an opportunity to point folks to healthdata.gov and basically say, here's one of the activities we're engaged in. Here's a recent blog about some things that are happening at CMS, blah, blah, blah. So it's an opportunity to sort of spread the word about a public platform on an internal network, and I think that it presents a real opportunity to improve communications and awareness about what it is that we're trying to accomplish. On the last bullet, I'll just say quickly that the Idea Lab, as I said at the beginning, has been thinking through sort of the different ways that we can do the business of government better. And there are a multitude of different innovation pathways that the Idea Lab has created in order to foster innovation, celebrate it, foster it from its inception, and then expound upon it once we've decided that something is worthwhile to expound upon. I won't go into the various pathways. They're really cool and creative, and I would encourage you to go to the Idea Lab site and just read quickly through them. But one of the things that I realized was important is each one of these may have an opportunity to produce some level of data, and that data may be valuable on the outside for people who have had similar ideas for innovative projects. So introducing the tenets of the Idea Lab innovation pathways is something that we've also considered. Incentivizing and enabling the health data ecosystem, we want to continue to publicize the availability of the data. I think that this strategic goal probably could be merged into some other ones, but it did fall into sort of incentivizing the marketplace, helping folks to understand that data is actually one of the main fuels for the changes and transformation that are going to help happen across healthcare and the delivery of social services. We want to seek new ways to engage entrepreneurs who may use the data for fuel for their businesses and innovation. And I would look to this group and your networks to help us to understand some of these new and innovative ways that we could be engaged with some alternative communities than the ones that we're already engaged with. So I won't go into that any further, but just put on your thinking caps as to how we could try to do some outreach and get some people to understand a little bit better what the possibilities are. We want to develop relationships and support the needs of federal and non-federal data projects, data enclaves, data repositories, and innovative test beds for more powerful analytic capabilities. You know, it's often said that things like CMS claims data are incredibly valuable, and people have, you know, you have to go over hurdles to try to obtain access to the data. But if you could actually obtain that data in some way and get it into your own data enclave where you've got personally generated data from a cadre of people with Fitbits and, you know, clinical data from a core set of, say, Kaiser Permanente type, you know, practices, you could actually start to mash up some of those data sets and get some real meaningful analytic information out about the population, about the way healthcare is delivered, about all kinds of quality metrics, et cetera. And so we are engaged in a process of trying to figure out the different methodologies for how we could even begin to broach the topic of getting data from HHS into external enclaves. So just know that this is something that we are currently thinking through in recognition of the fact that it's not just about some of the data that's openly publicly available, but it's some of the data that you almost feel you could probably never get a hold of that we want to sort of find the pathways to yes, as opposed to having the answer constantly be no. So just recognize that we're interested in finding the ways to put data into some of these external repositories in a way that makes sense for us and for those external users. I'll close with the implementation of administration and departmental policies. One of the things that we set out to do was create a charter for the Health Data Initiative. That task is thankfully complete. I was very proud to get Secretary Sebelius to sign off on a charter for the Health Data Initiative before she departed the department. So that was pretty exciting. The charter was signed in May 2014. So we now have a Health Data Initiative that will go on into the future. Thank you. So I'm on the next slide, implementing administration and departmental policies. Another thing is the implementation of the open data policy, M1313. You know, as I said before, we were lucky to be led out front by Todd and Greg and so many other sort of innovative minds who were, you know, instrumental in creating the first Datapalooza. And so we find ourselves in a pretty strong position in terms of the implementation of M1313. That is not to say we are perfect. We still have things we need to accomplish. But generally, we have done pretty well in terms of creating structured data output of the catalog to federate to data.gov, for example. We've been pretty good at the discovery and management of data sets, and we're expounding on how we can make that activity even better. We're drafting plans to address the impact of the Holdren memo, on increasing access to the results of federally funded scientific research. We want to understand the Holdren memo in and of itself, but we also want to understand the Holdren memo in the context of the M1313 public, you know, open data memo. So what we really are engaged in now is sort of a process of understanding the and clarifying the relationships between all of these various memos and actions and all these things coming out of OSTP so that we can create some meaningful and strategic approaches to how we're going to implement any one of these alone and how they sort of fold into and mash up with each other. So I think that is about it. I guess I'll close with a final slide with other considerations. So I'll just say the timeline for the strategy and execution plan was tight. This was the first time I had ever written a strategy and execution plan of this breadth and depth, and I felt like I could do everything by 1Q 2014. But that is not entirely accurate. But needless to say, the schedule was pretty tight. And so there is some slippage in some of the dates that you would see in the strategy and execution plan. However, some of the goals are further along than we planned them to be. The data federation that I talked about with multiple other federal data resources from the states and from other entities has gone gangbusters. And we are well ahead of the goals that we set. So, you know, there's some positive news there. Needless to say, though, we have some data quality and metadata issues that we need to hammer out with those folks, but we're in conversation with them. We've got their data federated, et cetera. The time and resources of other participants are a factor. You know, if we're going to enable and incentivize the marketplace, well, it's not just going to be me, Serena, and Greg doing it. It's going to be a cadre of other people. And, you know, I need the Jim Cravers and the Steve Cohens and the other folks of the world to be engaged in this process of external outreach, et cetera. And, they also have day jobs, not unlike the folks in this room. And so we have to figure out the different ways that we can make this happen. There are lots of shiny objects. And I'll be honest with you, there's some really cool stuff happening, and every time one comes up, I'm like, ooh, we should do that, right? But then as soon as we do that, the last shiny object that came up is now being neglected. So we have to be really, really conscious of how many things we are actually accepting on our plate and just be okay with saying, I would love to, but I can't right now. And so just our Office of Business Management and I forgot what OBMT stands for, basically brought us a data visualization project. We've been thinking about a dashboard for publicly reporting the progress of the strategy and execution plan. Those were two things that were not in the strategy and execution plan, but they clearly need love and attention. So you can just see there are lots of interesting things coming along that are going to divert our attention for various reasons. Finally, we need to accumulate some of the methodologies for some of these objectives. We don't necessarily have the expertise for some of the things that we'd like to accomplish. They have to be done. But I'm not a metadata expert, for example. And I'm not necessarily an expert in getting the metadata experts together in order to create some lessons learned and best practices that we can quickly implement across the department. But it needs to be done, and we need to figure out how to develop those methodologies to achieve some of those common objectives. So I just wanted to point out some of the considerations when you look at the strategy and execution plan, especially in consideration of what we have or have not achieved so far. Just recognize what the climate and landscape look like for our small cadre of people. So I will close there, take more questions if you have them, but I really appreciate your time to offer an update as to what has transpired so far. So thank you guys very much, and I appreciate your contributions.
So we thank you very much. I mean, this is extraordinary, what the progress and the escalation of the progress that's been made. It's great, and thank you. You know, it's great to be working together. So I guess we'll just go around the room and start with Chris.
Damon, that's great. And I wanted to get to the point where, you know, we're consumers of data from the warehouse, and I'm wondering about creating a feedback loop around, because we're collecting metrics, user-centric metrics around every data set that's being used to create a map, every data set that's being used to create a CHNA report from HHS. I'm proposing as part of the experiment, why not provide those metrics back to you? Because you're getting a one-time consumer hit on your site, but what we're getting is hits over and over again. And I'm just, instead of a BFF, we could be a DFF, like a data feedback friend or something like that.
But I like that.
So, you know, it's not just our organization, but Healthy Communities Institute, Health Landscape, and there are a lot of great groups out there that are using your data and maybe setting up a protocol for that formalized automated feedback loop to you all would be something really worth exploring. So then you can get a combination of your, you know, strategic relevant data assets. And then you can have trending data assets. And how close are they aligned between your strategic mark versus the trending? Are they way out of whack or are they close? So I just wanted to add to that experiment and offer maybe a test bed opportunity with what we're doing with community.
I think that's a fantastic idea. And, I'm so glad to have my first DFF. But I think that's a really cool idea, you know, because if you guys are seeing the ways that you can be contributory back toward an understanding of how the data is being utilized down the road, to go back to Walter's comment, you know, that's one of my challenges is knowing even where it's going and how it's utilized. If you're able to provide some level of feedback, that's really fantastic. And often what we need is one example in order to, you know, get a whole bunch of examples to pop up. And someone else will say, hey, we can do that. And so I would be very interested in pursuing that further with you, Chris. Thank you. Leah.
Are you another DFF?
I will. For you, always. I love that. God. I would also amplify that by suggesting follow on with some of the API companies, the Masheries, the Keen IOs, who are actually kind of pulling out some of the data sets,
but also doing some pretty sophisticated analytics on it, and give you a much better idea of what they're seeing in terms of how it's being disseminated.
That's a great idea.
And just, you know, another opportunity for this public-private partnership.
Yeah, I would love to take some connections from you.
I'm delighted.
Thank you.
To make that.
Leah gave us a connection to go back to the State of Federation. She was in contact with Puerto Rico, and we had a conversation with Puerto Rico earlier this week. So all the, I mean it when I say, like, I'm interested in these kinds of these connections, because we will follow up on them and make them meaningful parts of our approach.
Thanks. Go ahead, great team.
Great team. Go ahead,
Damon, I want to add my appreciation for your time.
Thank you.
I have two questions. One goes way back to where you started quite a while ago. If I heard you correctly, you said you could benefit from a working definition for strategically relevant data sets.
That's correct.
Data assets.
Data assets, that's right.
Assets. Yeah. Just say a few more words that further refines and defines what it is you need.
Okay. So the strategic plan is it's publicly stated. It's got, you know, multiple tenets to it. And to be honest, arguably, the data assets that we produce out of any one of our activities arguably should be strategically relevant, right? Why are we doing something if it doesn't directly relate to our HHS strategy? Could be one argument. And so I guess what I'm saying is, it's the strategically relevant data asset is another way of saying high value data sets. So it shouldn't be star dot star. It shouldn't be every single asset out of every single activity that we do. It should be, at the very least, if we could have folks focus on specific data related to strategic plan steps 1, 2, and 3, here are the 2 to 3 data sets that we think would be most relevant in this domain. So it's a means of sort of streamlining or focusing folks on some data assets versus, I guess, trying to boil the ocean, if you get my meaning. Was that helpful at all?
Yes.
Okay.
One follow-up on that is, of high value to whom?
So high value has a lot of different meanings. And as I said before, you know, you and I are going to see the same data set from 2 completely different angles. I think there is a space for the public to indicate what is high value to, quote-unquote, them. I think there's also a strong opportunity for those who collect and curate the data from the inside to say, this data is valuable in the following ways, and it's supportive of these initiatives. It is. It could be correlated with these other data sets, such that you start to see its strategic relevance because it's potentially, quote unquote, core to some other activities, or it's such a comprehensive listing of data points. I think it could go a bunch of different ways, and I've not necessarily refined what that definition would look like. But that's something that I'm looking for the health data leads to be contributory, and at least from the internal perspective, is here's what I think is strategically relevant for these specific strategic goals and why. And then it may be that we turn it around and ask the public, you know, what is your opinion of these various data sets for, you know, for whatever reason. So I don't have a specific approach as to how we're going to accomplish this, and so that's part of the reason I'm interested in the feedback from you guys.
And cut before you were just speaking about just moments ago, but I was quite taken when you said the Data Federation was going like gangbusters. What's your thinking about what accounts for that?
You know, it's interesting. I think that it's a lot of different factors. Part of it is, so at the federal level, we were mandated. Like, if we weren't standing here at HHS and we were at some other agency that did not have a Todd Park or other type person there, they're now required to do this. And so they are back, they're in 2010, I guess, when this whole thing started here, in terms of where they are. And so I guess what I'm saying is there's a forcing function, at least at the federal level. acknowledge the data, its collection and curation, and manage the data across its entire life cycle. Think about open data as a byproduct of the activity that you are about to procure an IT asset for, or for the grant, or for the research, or whatever. So there's that. I think that there are there's the open data community that has just grown. I mean, and it's not just health. It's all across the nation in a multiplicity of domains where open data is actually fuel for all kinds of varied innovations. You know, it's I saw a really interesting example about how someone is using USDA data and historical weather data to allow farmers to get crop insurance based on the conditions that are predicted, you know, for the year. Don't let me mess up the example. But the idea is that open data has been transforming all kinds of different domains. And so as that community has grown, I think so too has there's been an additional growth in those that are interested in making data available. So there's this growing demand, but there's this growing supply where, you know, there's governors across the nation that are saying our data will now and forevermore be openly available. And, you know, you're not going to get a group of governors together without a little bit of competition. And, you know, I can guarantee you that when one governor says one thing, another governor is going to say we're going to do that too, right? And it's states and localized entities. And I think it's just becoming something that people are demanding more and more, and it's become more and more of something that can be accepted by the public, that you can put data out that is not necessarily something that I would be uncomfortable with having the public utilize, especially when you have the examples of how can be utilized for the greater good, you know what I mean? And so I think that part of the reason the Open Data Initiative has moved so positively forward is because we have so many examples of the great stuff you can do once you can get your hands on the data. You can capitalize on your ideas and make things happen. So those are not official. Those are my opinions as to what has transpired.
Thank you.
Sure.
Leslie. So this goes back to Walter's question about the data palooza and privacy this morning. And, you know, we're all aware that as data become increasingly enriched and as analytics get more powerful, the possibility of identifying individuals gets higher.
Mm-hmm.
And you did mention, I mean, provenance is one way of trying to trace what happens to data after it leaves your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering whether there are any thinking, any resources that might be helpful about follow-up on the privacy risk side.
When you say follow-up, can you be more clear?
Well, so if you release a data set and it's meant to be, it's a public use data set, which was constructed in such a way that you thought no one would be identifiable from it. But it actually turns out that when it's used as part of an enriched package,
mm-hmm.
Identification takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about how to figure out whether that's happening, what to do to try to mitigate the possibility of that happening?
Yeah, so...
Or what could be of help?
I've learned a lot in this space. So, opening caveat, I am by no means an expert. But I've had the opportunity to talk with a lot of different folks about what our privacy and security measures look like across the department, especially from the open data perspective. And I get the impression there's about 18 different data fields or something like that you can remove from a data set in order to de-identify it, which is one of...
That's the standard HIPAA.
Right, the standard, right? So off the bat, that's, you know, if you're not revealing, you know, sex, zip code, name, date, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, like you've already started from a pretty, you know, a relatively significant place of providing some level of data security because you've clearly sort of taken away the immediate identifiers. It's my understanding, too, that people are doing all kinds of things in terms of, you know, perturbing the data and, you know, swapping data fields and all kinds of other stuff in order to further de-identify. So, you know, the woman who appears in the age range 35 to 39, you know, basically they're changing her age, for example, in order to make her a different age and therefore not directly identifiable as plotted up against other data sets. So it's my understanding that there are a myriad of different activities based on how sensitive the data actually can be. And, again, I think that the value of the data from a public use perspective is so high, and our data privacy activities, I think, are pretty strong such that I don't necessarily have a concern with that. And part of that, I think, is because each individual operating division actually has its own robust set of privacy and security measures that it goes through before making the data publicly available. And there's an attestation in the back end of healthdata.gov that basically says you have gone through the processes for your operating division and as a client with HHS to say this data is private and secure based on the things that the department and our operating division have outlined. So every one of our data sets has that privacy and security attestation in it, and each one of the health data leads before promoting the data set to the IDEA Lab for promotion to HealthData.gov has to make that attestation. And so, I guess that's about all I can say from my non-expert perch.
I guess just as a follow-up, some of the methodologies used to protect individuals from identification actually make the data less usable.
Right.
Some of the perturbations. So, I mean, my question really comes from the joint goals of having the data and having it be appropriately protected.
Mm-hmm.
And so one way to think about that is to try to actually figure out what the risks are of different kinds of data sets being released in different types of contexts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I asked partly about what kinds of follow-up, because if the data just go out there in the big bad world and you never know what happens to it,
you're
not going to be able to think through how much do we have to perturb, for example.
It's a good question, and it's a major challenge because you have the desire to make the data as usable as possible and identifiable, but then you also have the desire to keep people's PII protected, and you can't do both. So that we have a real major challenge in that way.
My apologies, Kate has a hard stop, and so we can come back to this, but I want to give Kate a chance to talk about the Health Indicators Warehouse.
All right, thank you guys for your time. Over to Kate.
Yes. Don't go.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I'm very sorry, but
we need a break.
Yeah, we'll take a break.
Oh, yeah, I'm just.
Yeah, go ahead. My other hat is being a team commander of a deployment team, and we're on call right now, and I'm sending to people to Nogales, and we have a call at 3, so I'm going to go forward, and I'm sorry. So I just wanted to start out by saying thank you for inviting us to give this presentation. It was something that Justine had seen Jim's presentation at the Datapalooza, and she thought it would be a good idea to show it here. He's unavailable. I'm here. But hopefully this will give you a little feedback on what's going on with the warehouse. I know you all have heard about it before, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but sort of talking about new features. So just as a really... healthcare utilization and access, social determinants. We have been pushing a user interface that allows people to actually see what's in there
but it's not beautiful. It's here's what we have. An ability to chart and map data permitting, because not all the data are at lower levels than national, so that you can, again, see what's there, and then a real push to with our API to make the data open and machine readable. What it isn't is a data tool. So it's pre-tabulated data. You can't go in and look for your particular interest point if it's not already there. It doesn't generate tables. It's not designed for a specific target audience. And in fact, what we're trying to do is pull data from those specific target population databases and put them all together and all in the same format. And I'm the kind of the data person in the background, and I spend a lot of my time pulling data in and reformatting it so that it's all the same. And we're not trying to replace anything else that's out there. So right now, we keep saying we have over 1,200 indicators. We're closer to 1,300 right now at different geographic levels. And that's where I will say I feel I would love to push more local and, not put as much effort into our national data sets. But I also work at the National Center for Health Statistics, and we do national data. So it's a push-pull there from a lot of different data sources. Obviously not all from us, federal, some NGOs, some trade organizations like the AMA and the HA. We are pulling it where we can. And we basically are represented in five initiatives or programs. And this is how many of you have heard this. This is kind of how this warehouse started, was we were providing data for different initiatives, and we saw there's no purpose in doing a data run for one particular initiative. Let's make it available for everybody, make it machine readable. We've done a number of different things. So we're getting data from CMS, the Community and Utilization and Quality Indicators, the Community Health Status Indicators, which is a project that started out being very important, kind of went into hiatus for a little while and is coming back. County Health Rankings. New to our list is the Health United States, which is an NCHS product, and that we're pushing the machine readability of that publication, which currently or until now was only available in PDFs and Excel spreadsheets, and the Healthy People 2020 initiative. The day before Data Palooza. And we did this last year, so I don't know why we keep doing this. We released a new version, and it's actually 2.0, so it's a big change for us. It was a refreshed look and feel. It was a refreshed way to use the data. We updated the homepage design by improving some of the pathways to indicator selection. We realized what we started out with was not usable, is not helpful to most users, so we got rid of some of the selection criteria and pushed people into a certain way of finding indicators. And then we introduced a space to highlight relevant sites and sites of interest and sites that we're specifically looking for products that are using the data and highlighting that. And we started out, I think we have five or six now. We're hoping to add some more. When we find our DDBs, DDFs. So, again, Health United States, I can't tell you how painful that publication, which is a required publication from NCHS, they came to us and said, we need to make this machine readable. Help us do that. And it is not produced in a way that makes any sense for anything other than a PDF. It was just, it's a nightmare. So we've got 38, and I say, yay for us, we got 38. We're going back in time and getting those 38 indicators. We'll keep moving forward, but it's slow. we put down septicemia deaths for 2010. That sounds like it's ancient history, but one of the things that we're playing with is, okay, we have this process for getting mortality data in. Can we now expand so that then maybe we can not just have the 10 leading cause of death at the top level, but maybe we can move down top leading cause of death for most men and women, or the 10 leading causes of death for white, African American, et cetera, race, ethnicity. That will help generate some interest in the data. So we're working on that. Septicemia deaths were the response to CHSI, but it helped us realize we can do a lot more with this. And as a comment, yes, we're only at 2010. 2011 is about to be released any second, and we've already got the data in the pipeline. We've analyzed it already internally, but we're waiting for Delton to release it. Natality, we're up to 2012. We put that data in. BRFSSS, we have county estimates. Actually, we've made this arrangement with BRFS folks that we would be their county estimate provider to the public because they didn't have at the time. I don't know where they're going with that because they're creating their own model data, and we're going to use whatever it is that they create, but they might be producing it as well for themselves. But we're, again, having this machine-readable format that's the same for all the other things, all the other data that's in the system, hopefully that makes it more useful. And some other stuff from Census, American Community Survey, and Bureau of Labor Statistics. As we get the data, our push, we're a very small team. We lost a person. We're about ready to hire somebody. So as far as data goes, it's me and as much data as I can create and push into it. The sooner we have more staff, the better. So what's new with the API? So in February, we released version 5, and we now have a registration key that is required. We did that so that we could go back to our users. We now know who the users are, and we can say, what are you doing with it? How is it helpful? Can we do something better for you to make this a more useful system? There's no... we're not putting a burden on anyone as far as the keys. It's just a way for us to hopefully do some evaluation later, somewhere down the line. There's three applications currently that are making up the warehouse, the indicator selection section, the developers section, and then the services, the data itself. So that's three applications that are running. And then, as I said, version 2.0 release did a lot for the API. We have a new try-it section, which I'm going to, I don't know if you can see that, but that it allows people to actually go in and kind of create code and on the fly do some testing of REST services and gives a lot of information about how to use the API. We did a lot more, we did some work to help people with their workflow, and the documentation section is much more complete. We've included some, we're going to include the Code Academy information. It's still not released yet, unfortunately. There's still some work on it. So I just wanted to say a little bit about responses to some of the thoughts about the warehouse in terms of usability and other factors. So as far as usability goes, we do provide links from each indicator to other indicators that have either the same keyword or same topic area. We do chart. The charting is pathetic. The map makes Michigan look like some ridiculous state that doesn't exist in the planet. But it's open source code. You know, we weren't trying to make this very nice. It was just, here's the data. Is it what you're looking for? Great. Go and take it and use it somewhere else. Again, this new links to sites and projects where the data is being used, we're hoping is going to help people go and get creative with the data and say, oh, well, you can do that with it, this, the contents. Maybe we can do something else. We have released an indicator report that is in both PDF and now in Excel. I was really frustrated with the PDF where it's all in alphabetic order, and it's like, well, you know, how am I supposed to find everything that had the word STD in it, which is at the end of the alphabet, but it's actually spread out all over. So there is now a much better way to find, to download the whole set of indicators and play with them. And it also allows on that Excel sheet, also gives information on the geography that's available. So you can say, okay, what's all the indicators that are to the county level? And by the way, our CMS data by the end of the month should be all at county as well as HR level. And we have put in an application for an evaluation staff member to work with us and try to do some evaluation, because that is key to increasing the usefulness of this site. And you know, we've all been struggling with how to do evaluation. It's not on a federal site. I mean, it's hosted by our contractor, so we can't use the CDC mechanisms. It's a little tricky, so we'll work with this fellow and hopefully get something going with that. Just quick Google Analytics information. The average user goes to 4.4 pages, so we're keeping people at least a little bit. They spend at least an average of about 3 minutes per session, and our bounce rate isn't great, but, you know, there it is. We can keep on getting better. Our numbers, our page hits are increasing slowly, and, again, we're going to keep looking at this and see how we can improve. As far as data documentation, we have published the ERD for both the metadata and the data. It's now out there. The metadata, we spend a lot of time on. We've been working really hard. The initial use of metadata on the download files was horrible, so we spent a lot of time with the contractor fixing that. And I still struggle with better ways to improve that metadata. And in fact, the first thing that the new staff is going to be working on is really working hard on getting that cleaned up, because it's been a big work in progress. And timeliness. Now, that's where I will say is our weakness. We're a warehouse. We publish only after the data producers have released data. We're not producing the data ourselves. We're taking it from elsewhere and putting it into the system. What we have done is created a lot of programs for repeated computations, so that once we get the data, we can reformat it and get it into the system as quickly as possible. But we're at the waiting end of how fast, you know, we can only put the data out there as fast as we get it. And we're not creating it ourselves. And that's about it as far as this presentation goes, because I really wanted this to be short and sweet and hear your comments and questions, which is where I really want to get some information from you all.
So I'm happy to start. This is sort of a follow-up I was going to do with Damon, Kate.
Okay.
I need to let you know that
Where's the microphone?
I'm a former member of OAEP in my past, so I'll be kind. Actually, it has to do with when we think of strategic relevance, the two things that folks want from data are granularity and timeliness. And the meeting I just got back from, we were talking with NCHS folks and with state folks about what we can do to make, starting with vital statistics, our data much more timely. And clearly there's policy-oriented folks who think the data that we generate is too old to use. So we're discussing provisional data, both with the mortality folks at NCHS and a bunch of state folks, and I'm really optimistic that there are ways that we can generate much more real-time data that is representative of the geographic units for which we want the data that would really reduce the time cycle significantly. This is something NCHS had done in the past, the concept of 12-month ending data, and now the states are beginning as a whole and individually to focus on how we can get data out, what's good enough, so I really think this is the next frontier that we should all be focusing on around releasing data more timely. And when people, 2010 is not a good year and to be releasing data for. Even though vitals, Delton promises death data through 2013.
By the end of the year.
Will be available by the end of the year. Still, there are ways to get the data even more timely. And I think many of our data collection systems are fine-tuned enough to be able to generate solid quality information in a more real-time way. We've just never really thought about the need to do that strategically, and I think that should be an initiative that we all embrace.
I would definitely agree that you're way behind the times as far as the data. And I will, from one side I can say, again, we'll put out the data when it's given to us, and I can't, from my seat, do much better, more than that. There is provisional data that's released, but it's not released in a way that it's released in a tabular way to everybody, and so while we could probably release that data machine readable is pretty at a pretty high level, and I'm not sure how useful it would be. But that's a good place to start and think about what we can do to push ourselves forward. I was just at another meeting before this, hearing that yes, we're catching up with the vitals, but starting then the following year, the money will dry up and we'll be going backwards in time.
I want to be respectful of your hard stop at the o'clock. So
I can go another 5 minutes or so, and I'll just miss time. I'll have to call in.
I don't want to jeopardize security or anything. I mean, we were just saying if we can we pull it up on the screen just to demo it there.
Can I go?
I'm guessing that it's not. You can't do it on the iPad.
Start there, bottom left.
There.
Can we help?
There we go. Yeah. Wait. Get back here.
Is that connected?
Is it? I don't see Laura up there.
Right.
You want to see the? I have it actually open.
Okay.
You want to?
You have it. What you said?
Yeah.
Can you hook your computer?
You want to just hook
there?
It up over
sure.
there so we can do it?
Yeah.
Just looking for Explorer.
Oh. Oh.
Right. Just get back.
All right.
Which file are you looking for?
Explorer. Internet Explorer.
Oh, I don't have the internet on here.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the drawback here at the building.
No internet.
Hey, Kate, for what it's worth, I mean, I use your stuff all the time very regularly, and, like, the progress on metadata is just mind-bogglingly good. It's, like, best practice in publishing the ERD. And, like, Bruce said, like, yeah, latency is one issue, but kind of in the realm of, like, open data, what's interesting about it is that I know that you're going to have next year's data out there at some point, right? And so if I'm building a system or a product or a service or making an investment, you release hospital, you release, physician compare, does that come out next year? Does it come out 3 years from now? I don't have any visibility into it, but I know your stuff at some point is going to come out there. And so, like, that gets to the reliability of is it worth the market investing in that? So that's why we started with your stuff, like, out of the gate and seeing the evolution of it. And it's pretty staggering. Like,
great. Thank you.
Is it the one I think?
Yeah. Let's see if we can get a full screen on
it. Oh, a smaller screen, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Kenny, not a quick comment, that's okay.
Ken, get your other phone.
Can you hear me at this point?
Much better. Somewhat
okay.
Better.
Yeah, just quick, I'll say, in terms of the issues with trying to get meta tagging and other curation of data and getting pushing the ball forward with that, I mean, it might be interesting to look at different ways of using the community to actually do that moderation. I mean, there's a lot of health students out there, a lot of data students, data sciences, a lot of people interested in it. So looking at some sort of model that sort of merges sort of community-based feedback to that curation, meta tagging, and other tasks with some sort of moderated data resources at the agency. That's all.
Did you change phones, Damon? Because we could hear you very, Kenyon, we could hear you very clearly before and less clearly now. If you have another option, that would be great. Yeah. Kate, did you want to just show us briefly?
Oh.
I was trying to find septicemia.
You want to find so there are two ways to get to the data at this point. There's the topics. This is where I'd love to hire a librarian who could help me with really categorizing data, and that's one of my things that we're going to fix. Is once that's covered here, I should be able to.
Pull the microphone.
But the other way to do it is a search. Septicemia. Oh, who put that there? No, that's not how you spell it, is it?
Nope. Spelled it wrong.
I spelled wrong. Yeah, that's right. I didn't spell it right. Remove. Yeah. Anyway, I could spell.
This is Kenny again. Sorry, can you hear me a little better now?
Yes, that's much better. Thanks.
Okay, sorry about that disturbance. I just had a quick comment on the meta-tagging, curating, cataloging of data thing that, I mean, looking at ways to leverage the community through the platform to help with some of that curation could be a way to sort of enhance the resources applied to it in partnership with an agency resource. There's a lot of health students, data students, other people in the community that would be interested in doing that. And there's sort of methods you can put in place to do well that could help push some of that curation needs to the community. That's all.
Oh, that's
thanks.
Great.
Okay.
Do you have some of those students, Kenyon?
I have some. They're all over the place. I don't know if anyone's seen the CDC's microtasking social site, which created this sort of gamified platform to have public health students help them with all kinds of agency data tasks, other types of activities, both administrative and operational. And it's really caught on. I mean, there's a huge bit of activity.
Well, that may be helpful.
I'll be
helpful
happy to forward a link to that at some point. It'd be useful for the group that's the other.
That's great. Thank you. Did you want to say anything more about that?
I don't know what.
So what you're showing us then is that septicemia for 100,000 and it breaks it out by predicted categories.
By predicted categories, and this can be looked at because this has been this, as it says on the top, it's national, state, and county data. You can then pick a state, and it'll show the state estimates, and then if you go to the counties, you can actually see the county estimates. I'm not sure what I was trying to show here, but they are there.
Counties are this.
This right now is the county of...
This is Florida. You probably need to enter county.
Oh,
county.
Right.
So this can be exported... how is this exported to Excel, did you say?
Excel or CSV.
Yeah.
Or machine-readable through the API.
So, and the way that you decide, I think it gets to what Damon was saying before, of, like, what would be topics people would want to see? I mean, how do you decide what's worthy of indicatorship?
Yes, so that's a good question. We've been continuing to struggle with this, but our goal is we have somewhere on this. I'll find a page later that says propose a topic. We're looking to hear from other people what it is that people are interested in, and then we have a governance structure that to whom we will bring the proposed
ideas too. There are some criteria that they have to be publicly releasable, that they have to somehow be representative of the geography from which they come from. We haven't done anything that's not national, at least, or that doesn't cover all the nation. But at some level, we're open to, say, a state, say the California Health Interview Survey and including information from that, because certainly there are people for whom that would be useful. So our look, we're hoping to get people to, we thought we were going to be overwhelmed with people telling us all the data that they want us to put in, and we have been completely underwhelmed with proposals.
So a way that might be helpful, as Damon was saying earlier, that concept of things would come to HHS, but now reaching out, we have a community workshop coming up in October.
Mm.
And so we ought to make that connection of what we hear there that we can transmit to you of things that people would wish that they had.
Yeah, that's actually really would be very helpful.
Yeah, Larry.
Thank you, Justine, for making that connection. I like your glossary under your resources. I learned there that DNA means data not analyzed.
all depends on where you live.
What I'd like to ask you to just say more about has to do with something I've heard now for the last 2 hours about questions about the urgency of data release and the timeliness and all that sort of stuff. I want to hit the pause button on that because so much of the utility of these data actually is related to the question, compared to what? And so often the comparison is, well, that's what it was in 2014, what was it in 2004? What was it in 1994? Mm-hmm. And so many of the triple aims issues require time series analytic type work. Of course, the big matter question is, are we making any progress, on lowering costs, improving population health, changing health care? So what's the thinking about how the Health Indicators Warehouse allows connectivity back to the old data?
That's, I think, you could say that given our resources, we have to choose to move forward or go backwards. And we're kind of doing both. So, for instance, the mortality data is a good example. We have individual years worth of data only from 2008 through 10. We actually started with 2007 data and dropped it because at the end of a decade, you have to go back and recalculate based on new population census data with the intercensal estimates. It's a real pain in the neck. And hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have 2011, 12, and 13 data. And then we'll have a trend. Now, is it further back? No. And that's where I think resources are going to the question is what's of more value to the most value to the most people, going back in time on the indicators we have, moving forward and adding new indicators, or just staying afloat with what we've got. Our budget, unfortunately, is only as big as it is, and we are constrained by that.
So that, we all get our own opinions. My opinion is that that makes me sad. And
makes me sad, too.
But seeing Paul stand up over there, another thing to consider is not pulling entire data sets into the data warehouse, but being very intentional at a selected number of parsimonious measures that are stratified by different users and potential audiences. And by parsimonious, I'm talking about 10 that could be derived from data sets that are never going to be available in here, but for which this Health Indicators Warehouse provides some benchmark measures. And that would take resources. That's not, that should not be terribly expensive, it seems to me. That seems like something that could be done. And I'm not doing this just for intellectual interest. It just seems to me that that would be a real pull to this health indicators warehouse. If it's someplace where you can go where critical measures, you are already listed about what they were at several points in time. And guess what? If you keep going through our website, you can do work to find out subsets of those that interest you and that sort of stuff. So
I think this, ties back to the SRDA. You know, I'm hearing sort of a theme that there's so much to do, and we're trying to hone in on, can we do one thing before we do everything, to quote our chair. So what is strategically relevant? Is that what it stands for? Or whatever the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, do we try to hone that if we're trying to manage resources, you know, depth versus breadth?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a dichotomy. It can literally be two by two. Whatever the most strategic are, you go deepest, and then you expand out.
You can
whole plot on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think you could do both in a way.
Because, I mean, you've mentioned this several times, that you're resource constrained, and I think that if we have a little bit that's, you know, if we have a lot of things that are a little bit useful, or, you know, a smaller number of things that are powerful,
yeah.
We want to think about how we prioritize.
Well, and I think that I will add that some of these data, say the two-thirds that come from healthy people, don't require any resources on our end. So we're going to keep putting them in. I would say some of the indicators that we have on, say, how many states have a smoking law about pool holes may not be very useful, but it is a healthy people objective, and the data come to us freely and already formatted, so it's easy. On the other hand, there are some, I think we could, in fact, identify some strategically identified number of very important indicators and make sure that they get more attention from us. That would be good.
Yep. Well, yep. We're very appreciative of you, accommodating our time. Sorry that we ran over. Appreciate this orientation. You know, I think that we've seen it before, but seeing the new and improved, and also helping us to think about what you have is very helpful. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Good luck. Thank you. All right. My suggestion is we take a break, but get back here before 3:30 when we're expecting Karen. Okay.
Oh yeah.
How
you doing?
Great.
Okay, Josh.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay, just waiting for Josh. All right. We're okay. Just waiting for Wendy.
That's my fault. I'm delaying her.
Waiting for Bruce. Okay, and we can close the door. So we're. I guess awaiting Karen DeSalvo. And we also have an agenda. So I think we can fill a little bit of this. Excuse me.
Just keep going.
No, I will, exactly. One of the things most people saw this morning. I'm trying to think. Actually, Josh, you're the only one, but. But because I'm so fixated on all these visuals, I'm consistent, if nothing else. I think as we're thinking about what we heard this morning, the wonderfully exciting agenda that Damon presented, and I think the resonance of the things that we've been discussing were really it's important to keep us grounded, to think about what is the spectrum of things we should be thinking about, how can we help. And one of the things I wanted to do is just revisit, if you could, you know, you can stand at the letter we wrote to the former secretary about, changes that we'd like to see in the use, utility, and usefulness of data. And I think we touched on a lot of those things this morning. I mean, a little while ago. Somebody took my copy of it. I have it on here. I think that there were a lot of things that we could say, but there were so as I look at what we said, let's get this here. The steps to improve usability, use, and usefulness of selected online HHS data resources. So one was the user friendliness, and I think we've seen that in the health data indicators. I noticed that you gave us the data on bounce rate, pages visited, and time. So I think that we're having more pages visited. I think we were at 1.3 in this letter, and what did she say, 4 pages visited and 3 minutes. The bounce rate is still high at 52%. But, you know, it's helpful to ground us in that. And so I think that the recommendations that we had in many cases resonate with what is underway. The second thing was use of data, data documentation, and metadata. Again, that sounds like work that is a work in progress. And ultimately, usefulness of the data, timely availability, which we just discussed. But one of the things that didn't make the final cut of the letter that Kenyon in particular had been very articulate about, I think is worth talking more about. We'll have it reflected in the minutes even though Damon isn't here. But it's just this the learning community that brings together, and that's why I put this slide up here, we need the top down, we need HHS, we need the communities, we need the customers to know what the needs are. And the approaches, as we say the approaches, we're talking about data generators, data aggregators, miners, integrators. You know, Chris, I think you do a lot of this. And then the concept of the validators, because I think that's come up a couple of times in a worrisome way, that you can juxtapose a lot of data, draw a lot of confusion or conclusion, choose one. Or both, and that is an emerging important domain that I think we need to be paying attention to. And then I'm just looking down at the bottom as we talked this morning. What are the tools? The apps are the tools, and I put indicators because I think that is a tool. We can mine the data. We can think about what's important, and then the health indicators warehouse can be a tool to quickly get what you want for communities. And but as we went through it today, it's better than it was, but it still needs work. You know, I mean, and I think just even as Kenyon mentioned, the resources that are available with students or whatever to do some of the data organizing, et cetera. So at the bottom of this slide then is engagement and collaboration. So I think the work upcoming on the October roundtable is going to be, you know, generative for these kinds of things. And I think if we think about who are the people in the data food chain, we won't overlook or we won't miss out on that. Perfect timing. It's great. Karen, hi. Welcome. You're welcome to take Damon's seat at the front of the table. Thank you. So this is great.
Let's welcome Dr. DeSalvo. She doesn't need much of an introduction, but to be sure everyone is on the same page, she's the next National Coordinator for Health Information Technology at HHS. Has a very small job, and but she's the past City of New Orleans Health Commissioner and a Senior Health Policy Advisor to Mayor Landreau. Examples of the sorts of work I know her for are very hands-on, increasing access to care for vulnerable patients, for IT solutions for emergency preparedness. She graduated from the Tulane School of Medicine and the Harvard School of Public Health. And the most important thing I want to say about her, she's actually a really nice person. And we're so delighted that she's here and you're nice to put up with all you've been putting up with in the last 24 hours and still include us. Karen, we want to listen to you and to learn from you what your aspirations are to some extent. And consider how NCBHS might enable you to be successful.
Larry, thank you for that wonderful introduction. Larry was on the advisory committee when I was a Robert Wood Johnson Generalist Faculty Scholar, and that was such a formative part of my life, and so I appreciate all the mentorship that he and the other members of that group gave. And I'm indoctrinated with the important notion that health is more than getting people to a doctor, that it's about where you live, learn, work, and play. And I know Larry's done so much work in that space, and so it's been great mentorship. I think maybe I should stop there because Vicki looks really happy with what I said.
I love it.
All right. So well, thank you all for accommodating my schedule. As you probably heard, we end up spending a little extra time in Minneapolis, which is, I think, the nicest, friendliest city I've ever been to, and love it. And if I ever get stuck anywhere, I was delighted for that. But I appreciate you making time. I wanted to just give you some sense about where we are at ONC and where I see the field of health IT and how we're working to evolve ourselves and in partnership with the community to go forward. I would be remiss if I didn't start by thanking this committee historically for inventing ONC. And I have had the rich opportunity to know a lot about the history of the ONC, read the report that John Lumpkin was chair, meet with him and speak to him personally about it. I've talked to a lot of the original folks, and the reason I start there is because ONC's roots are in public health and in community health. And a lot of the language in the original thinking about the importance of standardizing data capture around people's health and health care, thinking about how it could be put to positive use to improve their lives, and the ways that ONC was conceived as a coordinator, as an opportunity to bring together the federal partners, but also bring together the private sector partners to really think about how the data for a fifth of our economy could be captured and put to really good use is something that speaks to me as a person who is not only trained in but spent time in local public health. And it's just great to think about how we can go back to some of those roots as ONC and begin to broaden our focus. So when I got here, we were at this pivotal time at ONC that we had been intensively focused and on the ARRA funding and on the Meaningful Use Program for a few years, very appropriately so. It was billions of dollars and a major ramp up in programs and spending and culture change in the country. The efforts around meaningful use, very successful. Stage one has brought widespread adoption of electronic health records. The hospitals particularly successful. I think we'd all understand why. They have bigger departments and generally budgets, and the bigger you are as an organization, the more likely you can adopt HIT providers. I think you saw some numbers this morning from Judy, two-thirds or more of providers participating in meaningful use if they're eligible. But across the country, really the majority of doctors' offices and clinics using HIT in the form of electronic health records. And exchange in some pockets, some aspirational models in our country doing extraordinarily well. There's some places where it's more nascent, and we have a lot of work to do to connect the EHR systems, but again, a great deal of advancement. And then I think some real clear examples across the country, even at the state level, where the promise and power of health IT is being brought to bear. It was in Minnesota. I think that's a terrific example of a state that's been very successful in a collaborative fashion. Maine, Kentucky, parts of Oklahoma. There is really, I think, an opportunity for us to look at prototypes that are working, but then also remember that we have to raise the floor for everybody. So we are coming off of the adolescent years of the big budget of ARRA, and it's really an important time for ONC to reflect on our roots and to think about the future and to think about how we become more efficient and effective in what we do. And that means internally as an agency, that as an office, that we are working on reprioritizing our work, doing deep inventories to understand where we have work that may be synergistic together, where we may be doing things that don't matter as much anymore because it's been successful or because it's not on the high priority list. and realign the way that we are running the agency and communicating with each other, flattening the organization because we're very matrix and entrepreneurial. The communication through those the silos that grew up quickly over time made some of our work a little challenging. So we're morphing and evolving in that, and also in some cases, like in Judy's, putting the portfolio of nursing out front as the chief nursing officer and changing the name of that group to the quality and safety because that's what they've been doing. They're not the office of the chief medical officer. So some of it is labeling but reflecting more of where, what we are actually doing as an organization. While we're doing all of that, it's also time for us to refresh the federal HIT strategic plan, which is one of our responsibilities, and to work with the partners in the federal government and beyond on a really high priority that comes up all the time in the environmental scan, which is interoperability. It's an interesting push and pull because what's happened is with all the success of IT adoption, we now have some new desires and challenges that you wouldn't have had if you weren't capturing the data in the first place. So, for example, on the challenge side, the user interface, the desire for doctors, nurses, and others who actually interact with the electronic health record isn't as powerful and strong as we would want it to be, and I think most people would want to see that the IT systems evolve at the front line. But on the other hand, there is a lot of data that's been captured, and freeing that up so it connects care for patients so that it is inclusive of new types of data, patient-generated, genomics, proteomics, wearable information from wearables, I think is a big challenge because we see that it's possible to collect, and we want to make sure that it's free to be put to appropriate use for care and science and beyond and public health. But then I think there's some really, I think that begs other questions about privacy and security and the need to make sure that IT systems are enabling and supporting care transformation and healthcare delivery, but also making it safer and better quality. The interoperability piece is a tie that binds, if I could describe it that way, for the committee. It is not the only thing that we're thinking about, but it is a way that we can weave together the work of ONC and the call to action that I hear recurrently from the private sector, from our partners at the VA, the DOD, SSA, Federal Employee Health Benefits, many others. And it is one of those really fun challenges that is solvable because people have solved it, right? There are places, as I mentioned, in the country where it happens. It's not perfect, but we have shown that the technology and privacy and security and governance and sustainability issues have some really good ideas out there about how to work it. But what we haven't done is woven those together, those successful places, and or brought up the floor for the places that haven't come along. And honestly, we haven't gotten even into some of the granular areas that I think we're going to have to go. So there's this big, big governance conversation about how is the data going to move, how is it going to move with equity and with an opportunity to make sure that it's appropriately used not only for care but for broader population, public health, and science purposes. But as you get really deep into the standards piece, we have some standards we haven't standardized. And so that it's, I think, preventing us from having the fundamental building blocks to really do things like quality measurements, not just quality measures, to have an opportunity to share a set of data that meaningfully informs care and can help identify people most at risk from population level. So we're unfortunately for everyone at ONC thinking, there's this really big frame, but there's this really deep dive we have to do, and I think that may help you all understand also why we're trying to really focus on interoperability and get ourselves and all of our efforts to some end goals, which we're beginning to outline. We did, in the area of interoperability, put out a white paper last week. It's really meant to be an invitation to anyone who might have an interest in seeing that information is captured and shared and put to use. That is, it's meant to provide some direction around some areas that maybe there's been some fuzziness. So, for example, that query response is a part of the portfolio of interoperability, and that direct isn't the only place that we're going to be, although it may have use cases, that we have to consider new types of data, not just electronic health record information, because it's common, and it's already there, and there's not really a nice way for it to fit, and we need to be inclusive and thoughtful about the patient's voice and vote in this data, but other sources as well. and that we have to be able to take advantage of our existing infrastructure, but begin to evolve in such a way that we have a robust structure that is flexible and adaptable to future needs. And we begged some questions about governance and sustainability and some of the other technological pieces. We're concurrently working internally in ONC to align ourselves around interoperability in those building block areas. We laid out five. We could share this paper with you if you want it. And then working also concurrently with our FACAs as a first pass of getting some subject matter expertise, but back to the public health vein, for our interoperability work or our national priority setting around health IT, I think it would be a mistake if ONC set those priorities or even HHS without getting out into the world. And because I've learned in every job I've had, but definitely in this one in the last 5 months, it's easy to get preoccupied with the fire burning in front of you or the tree right there that you're dealing with. And it's one thing, I think we can look at the forest beyond. We can help ourselves do that, to think about planning for an interoperability today and in the future, think about what the bigger set of priorities are around health IT that encompass interoperability. But if we really want to understand what's that vista beyond those mountains, we need the community to help us see. And I need to know what the innovative folks are thinking about in the market. I need to understand what potential use cases are that we're not really considering. We don't have to invent all those. We don't have to have every solution, but we have to build a platform and a set of rules of engagement and think about how this is a public good and what kind of sustainability model we're going to have that allows it to be as inclusive as possible going forward. And that's the kind of work we're doing. It's foundational. It's meant to be a platform upon which things can grow. And So as we move forward in this, we just wanted to get ourselves a little restructured and aligned to do this work again, this work that y'all set out for us years ago of being a coordinator, a convener, a policymaker. And this is concurrently, we're doing this within ONC with our federal partners, and we'll be ready to start engaging much more with the private sector in a structured fashion as we go forward to make sure that we're not, don't have blind spots, and that we're being as thoughtful as possible and as inclusive as we can. So I'll stop there and maybe take some questions. I could probably talk for an hour, but I guess I should say explicitly thank y'all for creating ONC so I could be here to do this really fantastic work, because it's really exciting. I mean, I just the energy around data in this country is, and let me say that properly. It's energy around data in some parts. It's energy around information for others, and energy around knowledge for others. But in all of those spheres, I think there's just this really great excitement about the potential and the promise, and folks are using their imagination in exciting ways. And I just want to make sure that we're protecting, as we should, people's data, and that we're creating the right technology platform that allows it to grow and flourish. That's all up there.
Karen, we have a habit of people putting their tents up, but this time, just put your hand up if you want to ask questions. I'll ask the person. Walter Suarez just had to leave, and he asked me to ask you this question. What can we do to align the work of the NCVHS Standards Committee with the ONC's HIT Standards Committee?
That's a great question. And so next week at our standards committee meeting for ONC, we're going to open a dialogue about focusing the work of the SNI framework to this point about there's been a lot of optionality and experimentation. Can we start to get ourselves focused on a path forward, respecting all the work that's been done? And some engagement, I think, in that public conversation that we have, I think it's next Tuesday, and we'll find out for certain the date. We get some eye on where we'd like to see the conversation go in terms of that SNI framework. I'll tell you directly that I have a particular interest in understanding if we, all of us, can come to a set of common data elements that would be the fundamental building blocks for the things that I mentioned. I, I, I'm I don't know much about what your standards committee has worked on, but my guess is that everyone's got some sort of set of things they're using, but they're not exactly overlapping. And in some cases, less aligned than we might have even thought. And I'll use gender as an example, or sexual orientation and gender identity, or race and ethnicity. But you even could think about blood pressure and the ways that that's measured in registries and in the CDC and other places. It sounds really simplistic, but if the standards and technology people do continue to believe that's the right way to go, I would like to get very focused on that, and meaning not inventing a lot of new things, but just saying, gosh, if these are the things that really matter, could we just come to some agreement that we're going to measure them all and collect them all in the same way? Data dictionary player, what I'm trying to say. And whoever's the furthest along and has the best option to offer, I think, is what we ought to start thinking about grabbing. It would reduce a lot of confusion for the marketplace and the vendors. That's a tactical thing to work on, I guess, but hopefully that answers your question.
Hey, Karen.
Hey.
Damon Davis on Brian Sivek staff in the Idea Lab. One of my thoughts coming out of the Palooza and thinking about what you said about interoperability was along the lines of the sort of entrepreneurial community, innovators that are utilizing public resources of data for their various innovations, but oftentimes they are very, very interested in how they can in any way interface with any EHR product that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, is ONC thinking through, as you use the term interoperability, mm-hmm. the fact that it's not simply the EHR to EHR, but it's also sort of, for lack of better words, aftermarket products or innovative interventions that are coming in. Can you say a little bit about what interoperability means with EHRs and the entrepreneurial endeavors that are out there?
Yes, this interoperability to ONC is much more than a EHR vendor conversation. I think we would really be missing what's happening in the world if we just thought about that. And in the white paper, we point to the JSON report as something for people to look at as a potential model and an evolutionary path. Part of the reason for that is because it speaks to the idea of opening architecture
mm-hmm.
and generic or other APIs that allow for more flexibility in data and querying of data, but also the user interface or exposing of the data. What's the performance layer on top? So I think that is the kind of approach we want to take. And I said it before, and I want to underscore it again, that if we only use EHR data to understand the health of our country, we've really missed something, because health is not just about healthcare. And I think for this body and even for us, we have a responsibility to have a broader view. So we absolutely have to have on and off ramps that allow for that with the appropriate authorization, privacy and security, and et cetera. But it's the future.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it's kind of here.
Hi. I'm Bruce, and my day job is with the Massachusetts Health Department.
Microphone.
Huh. Bruce. I used to work there.
Oh, yeah?
I did.
Bruce. Oh, yeah.
State Laboratory Institute.
Microphone.
I'm in the Bureau of Health Statistics.
Okay.
And I had research. And I'm very excited that you want to reinvigorate the public health focus of ONC. And I was just wondering what your thinking is about what the key public health data streams that you want to incorporate into this new effort will be.
So two responses to that. One is it's not just about the public health element of this is about the tools of public health broadly, the approaches to problem solving and inclusiveness of community, the sort of CHOCHIP process, if you will. The epidemiologic approach, they're really being thoughtful about the questions you're asking before you just start mining data, that kind of thinking. The second piece of it, though, is the informing of the public's health. And having come from local health department where we had really no data, it was pretty stale by the time we got it. It was almost impossible to understand in real time if we were making a difference in the community's health. That opportunity to provide a window into both chronic disease and communicable disease, amongst other issues, is powerful and important and must be done. I think that in terms of use cases, what's at least been outlined to us so far is important from the public health community, and I don't want to step on that because they're pretty aligned. It's a mix of immunization records, lab reporting, some surveillance, particularly around important areas like whether it's respiratory infection or sexually transmitted disease. And but some of y'all may know I have a particular interest in disaster preparedness and response and recovery and survival. And
in that order.
Well, you know, you have to survive all of it, actually. That's why I sort of threw it at the end. At the end of the day, the opportunity for clinical and or claims data to help identify people most at risk in our community from whatever that is an obligation, and we want to work with them on that. I think also, this is such a great first of all, IT is by nature multidisciplinary. Is that the right term now, or is it interdisciplinary? And when you go to meetings about IT, everybody's there, right? And including in Minnesota, yesterday Commerce was there, just like they are in me. And I love that because it's different, you know, view on the world, bringing different ideas, helps form a common language. I think that IT is also then a great platform for public health and medicine to start to really talk again and solve some problems about health, which is something a lot of folks are working on, but it's a wonderful, I think, venue for that, and I'd like to advance that idea as well. Plus, medicine has all the money.
Josh Rosenthal, what's beyond the VISTA, and what's success look like in 5 years? So you ask anyone in IT, what do you want to do? Interoperability, sure. I mean, you can spend years doing that. That's a huge hurdle, but that's a step towards something, I'm mm-hmm. assuming. So kind mm-hmm. of what's that a step towards in your vision?
Thank you for asking that. I probably should have mentioned it. But so I think that if I were to prioritize the use case piece, I think that nationally we have a national priority and obligation to reduce the cost of care, but only in such a way that it actually improves quality and then ultimately improve health. And the reason I put it in that order is because the cost piece, though good right now, could go up again, and the more money we spend on healthcare, the less we can reinvest in not just public health, but all the social determinants. We're making trade-off choices, and IT interoperability, not just because you see the end result and you don't repeat it or make the person miss work again to go get it, but because you can change delivery, right? You can not just through telehealth, but through asynchronous communication and different models of care that we haven't even figured out how to pay for yet, but. So IT is just, I think, a really powerful way to improve the care system, which frees up dollars to help us apply in other ways, which are going to also help health. There are some concrete definitional metrics that we're working on that we speak to a little bit in the white paper, but we're going to get a lot more concrete with folks about how we know we've been successful. And what's fascinating is that there's not really, or even around the country, it's the use case piece that people grab onto about whether we were successful, not just the movement of the data. And that's great, but in some ways, if you just get focused on moving the data, you could declare success as just faxing something if you're moving information. The success is also, there is success in a data dictionary we can all agree to, and then you can move the little bits from place to place.
Can I ask just a quick follow-up question? So that's what everyone would ask, and, you know, you have hardcore metrics and use case, and that's great in place. But when you lie awake
mm-hmm.
at night and you mm-hmm. say, I 5 years from now, I hope I'm wildly successful, like...
If my husband doesn't yell at me when I go home about his electronic health record. He did stop yelling. This is really sweet of him. And we had like this Mary Matlin, James Carville level fight on Capitol Hill, and I had to tell the waiter, I'm like, no, really, it's okay. We're just talking about his electronic health record and how much he loves it. But I'm sorry, I'm being silly, but it's not actually that silly, because what he's saying to me is there are expectations of entering data into a system that doesn't have the usability that I want, and I'm not getting information from it to help me take care of the people I'm trying to help. And it's also not, and he wouldn't necessarily think of the bigger frame, but as a doc,
yeah.
It's just, it's not bringing it home for him, right? And so it has to be, they had to move away from it just being a Palm Pilot to actually being something that is knowledge and is the dial. We'll get more specific as we go along.
I think that is perfect.
I don't mean to jump the line, but I've been saying that all that we're doing is great. My role is Chief Medical Officer for Steward Health Care, 2,700 doctors, private practitioners, and you know they have the same question. About the apps.
You could add another C here.
Husbands. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, clinicians. Clinicians who are husbands. I have one as well.
He's becoming quite famous in his own right. And by the way, he's always asking me to quote him accurately in his description of his electronic health record, but I told him that wouldn't be professional. So I have to use other words like
I think it will. I actually, it just sparked my imagination because it adds to your credibility unbelievably, and that's not in any way to take away from your credentials, which are extraordinary. Fantastic, and it's wonderful to have you in that role. But when I'm thinking about Raj, you know, and knowing that you have somebody who is boots on the ground working this through, I think it's very apparent. So
well, you know, and it, let me share with you also that, without going the long story, I have purchased and implemented 3 electronic health records in the clinic environment and purchased an electronic health record for a hospital that we were doing in New Orleans just before I left and left before we had to implement, so left that work to other folks. And I've used them. I mean, I'm still active, though not in the last few months, and so I have some sense of it, but you're exactly right. It's not the same. I'm not making my living trying to interact with an electronic health record, and that is a different game altogether.
Thank you. Vicki is here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they were up before me, so that's why I was allowing
them to go.
So I'm Leslie Francis. I'm at the University of Utah, and I co-chair the Privacy, Confidentiality, and Security Subcommittee of NCVHS. And also, in that capacity, I've been our liaison to the Tiger Team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm part of that, the Tiger Team for the Policy Committee. And, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job of getting a sense of what each other is doing. One nice thing that happened was the Accounting for Disclosure virtual hearing last fall, mm-hmm. where our group participated with OMC. Mm-hmm. But some of what's happened is most of the work on electronic medical records, interoperability, and privacy questions, that's all now at OMC. And we've been focusing much more on public health and data availability and privacy questions, data stewardship questions. We did a letter about a framework for thinking about stewardship, and we're working on a toolkit for communities when they use data to be appropriate data stewards. I'd appreciate any thoughts you have about whether that sort of feels like the right way to have laid things out or ways that we could better interface with ONC on the privacy and confidentiality side of things.
Those are a couple of great comments / questions that you made. Let me just start by saying, like most doctors, I probably didn't have that same legal frame and appreciation for security and privacy, but I've been very educated by Joy and her team.
Oh, yes.
So really rich resources, plural, there, and have a sense in my stomach that data's moving fast, and the kinds of data that we're compiling around individuals and otherwise is beyond the bounds of what we have rules to well define. And to your stewardship question, I'm not sure I know exactly what you mean by the term, but that kind of gets to this issue of who's hosting whose data and for how long and for what purpose and how do people have control over who sees it and for what purpose. Lots of really important questions. It's a major priority for us is what I want to say. And it's a place where we have strength and depth and experience and passion. Love to work with you on that. And I think, Paula, to Larry / Walter's question, maybe we need to have some way that we have an offline sit down and just understand how things are aligning. Because I mentioned at the outset that ONC is undergoing some structural realignment, and so are our FACAs. And I want to make sure we don't get a click off in such a way that we mess up some relationships there and figure out what that new piece looks like, so we make sure we stay connected with that. Thanks.
Karen, let me build off of that. Carrie reminded me of this just a minute ago. There were some statutory requirements we both got to address, and we need to harmonize that.
Exactly.
Can you you want to be more specific, Carrie? Or?
Hello, I'm Carrie Deutsch. I'm the senior technical advisor at OESS and CMS, and I'm also the lead staff for the Santa's Committee. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier is the need to be have standardization where everyone's doing the same thing. And in the standards subcommittee, we hold hearings and we hear from the industry and we make recommendations to the secretary so that we can do that, so that we can have the same things happening and people using the same products. And one of the statutory requirements are a review committee. That we look at the standards and the operating rules that have already been issued and have a venue that we can look to see if they need to be corrected or a new one done, and hopefully lessons learned that we do any new ones or we recommend any new ones, that we're not repeating any of the mistakes from the past. So I think that there are many opportunities that the different subcommittees and NCVHS, and the fact that we have the statutory requirement that we'll be contacting all of you. We're waiting for the secretary to do the assignment. That there are very great opportunities to make sure that we're all in alignment, and would appreciate anything that you can offer to help us in that direction.
Great. Consider it done.
So I don't know if you use sit down as a technical term, but that sounds like a really good idea.
Yes, talk. Let's talk.
Hi, I'm Bill Stead from Vanderbilt University. And I appreciate your comment early on about the fact we had both the back-end problems, if you will, the interoperability and standardization pieces, and the front-end problems. And I'd like to know what your thoughts are on the front-end side a bit. From my perch, the electronic health records, as where we've done the best at getting information together, the patients actually become lost in the data. And we don't have user interfaces that present cognitive support in a context-sensitive fashion. And we've also tended, as we've deployed the systems, to rigidify workflow that actually, as we get information, we want to change. So I didn't know what your thinking was about how we got, if you will, the kind of 10-year vision you've laid out around interoperability, around cognitive support and the workflow redesign, or anything like that. Is there something like that in the vision?
That's a great question. And I would have to say that I think it's implicit, but it's not really been something we've talked deeply about yet. And so I appreciate you raising it. It's the Clark's third law, right, is that technology sufficiently built is like magic, is not where we are right now with health IT and EHRs. And that this is a new thing I learned since I've been the coordinator. But the reason I raise it is because it's the most, and I use the phone as the example all the time that and it's a story about Brian Stivak, that we went to dinner and we were trying to decide if we were going to eat inside or outside. And Brian said, well, let me check my phone and see if there's an app called Dark Skies and see if it's going to rain in the next hour and where we should eat. And it just dawned on me that if someone had said something like that in 2001 even, you would have probably wanted to check their whatever, thought that they had lost their mind. And but it's just commonplace now. It's magic, right? It's not a phone. It's an enabler. It's a way that you help make social decisions in the moment. And EHRs are not there. But they've come really far. You touched on something really important I want to just grab, which is that standardization is great, and there are things that we should standardize. There's data points
potassium. That makes sense. But the context and the narrative of somebody's health and life, you cannot standardize that. And patients and clinicians don't want to lose it. And it's I think that's right. So it's a balance that we have to try to achieve. I believe that changes in technology, so if we drive things like opening architecture and exposing even generic APIs, and if fire is the thing that we think it might be as a technology and can really advance the interface, the user interface, and accelerate that, if ONC creates the right platform, the right regulatory environment, that can flourish and it's going to really advance the kinds of products that are available and the way we can modify products beyond what we have today. But we've been trying to be really thoughtful about what's the right place on the dial for regulation to make sure stuff is safe and secure and we're advancing, but that we're also not getting in the way of the innovation. We're not going to, because what I'm trying to say is ONC is not going to solve the user interface issue or the workflow issue. It's going to get solved in the environment, but we've got to make sure we're allowing for that to happen.
And incentivizing it happen.
That's right. Yep, that's right. There's lots of dials and lots of arrows and quippers that we don't cover we can use, and we have to make sure we're thinking about where that rests.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the things I want to try and figure out is you're hearing the themes around the table of all the different things that we do. And in the work group, in particular, we're kind of designing ourselves to be able to move nimbly, move quickly, and be able to be a resource. And so I'm not sure the best way to find out how we can be helpful to you. We can give you briefing information about who we are. We can give you our, kind of what we've done. But when you said to Larry about talk, what's the best way for us to figure out? Because you're reconstructing some of the ONC committees, and part of like when, I said I'd be the work group chair, that was one of the things I was concerned about is, some of the duplication that's there and making sure that we could align ourselves so that we knew what you were doing and we aren't working in parallel, but instead we're working in some integrated fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you can give us a sense of how we can best do that as you start to recreate so that we have alignment, it would be great. Because we're also kind of, taking off in a, in a pattern where we're trying to be helpful to the department.
So, I guess I'm sorry, I'm stumbling a little bit. And the reason is because though I know generally about the work that you do, I don't think I honestly didn't really see all this interconnectivity until we were just talking. And so, and I apologize for that. It's a lot of moving parts. I have to work. There's too much work to be done, and there's not enough time or money to go around for us to duplicate. So however you all think is the best way to make sure I'm up to speed and educated with my team, and that and you can see we can get a little deeper about some of the realignment and what's happening with the work groups, make sure that we're clicking, and there's so much to be done. We definitely won't be able to do it all, and so we want to make sure that we're thinking about what we need to do together. You all have a brand and a stature in the health and healthcare world also that would be great to tap into, if I could be so bold, that ONC doesn't have that same audience. And I think understanding the frame also about health broadly and about data agnostically, it would be extremely helpful to us. I think in some ways people, when you think of ONC, they think about electronic health records, and we want to be about much more than that. So as much as we can work with you to get there, we'd appreciate it. So I don't know, but the first thing I'll tell you is make sure you know Iommi Dinkler, who will raise her hand, who's my special assistant, who makes sure I do the things that I'm supposed to do, and she'll make sure that we find a good way to follow up.
And Debbie Jackson, would you raise your hand?
Okay, big
we're underway, and I invite you till we prove ourselves unworthy. Assume that we have no conflicts of interest. We are not trying to stake out any particular case. We would like to meet our statutory requirements, and I think you did a very nice job of describing where we are. This committee is virtually on fire right now around the theme of helping communities become learning systems for health. And we think that alignment with you and ONC is critical.
Hi, I'm Leah Vaughn, Health Policy Group. Thank you so much for joining us. A couple of things. I appreciate all of your remarks, especially around place and health, with my GIS hat on. And HIT is an opportunity for public health and medicine to reinvent some and refresh some enduring and critical, mission-critical issues and challenges. But I especially wanted to touch really back to getting out into the world. And I had the privilege of sitting down earlier this week with a group of California Safety Net providers, Safety Net hospitals, representatives from throughout the state. And they chose me, oh, you're going to D.C., as the person to carry their message, and so I'm going to try and honor that. They talked about some of the EHR challenges that they're having with very scarce resources, feeling like they're getting very, very much overrun by vendors. And beyond that, trying to think about how to really steward the data that they're getting ready to generate, let alone carry what they already have forward. Given those limited resources but passionate, deep commitment, they are trying to start to think about talking with each other, which is not necessarily always what they've done very well. But that applies to so many safety net hospitals throughout the country. And just to perhaps put forward the notion of convening those really critical providers as more people come on with ACA into the Medicare, Medicaid space to pool their challenges, pool their wisdom, and pool the opportunities for solutions. I think it's just a tremendous opportunity for public health and to really improve the outcomes of for communities that are challenged by so all sorts of competing social determinants of health.
Is that a softball question?
Okay.
Because, well, thank you for carrying that forward. In New Orleans, for the last 9 years until I got here, my work was around first helping to build a clinic safety net in a city that hadn't had any, and bring those providers together to both cooperate and compete. They were disparate entities, and in fact, advanced the number of federally qualified health centers, which are typically competitors, but they helped each other advance. They shared data in a RIO information exchange, and they were Beacon Project, and are all on electronic health records, all living off barely a couple of nickels and some friends. I mean, we were like, you know, cleaning our own toilets to get through the day, but yeah. We really, really wanted to advance the care of the community. So it's called 504healthnet.org, and I'll just stop there because I probably shouldn't even tell you more about that. But Ayami could probably give you more information because, you know, the rules. I was on the board. And, great group to think. They looked at other places around the country, like in Austin, ICC, the Integrated Care Collaborative. There's, San Francisco has this place in the country they should look to figure out how they do it. So that's one thing. And the other part I would just share with them is, depending on where they are in their payment model, I'll get back to this. This is an innovator, public health, and safety net, and person level goal, like this project that I want to do, which is little Johnny has asthma. Little Johnny's in and out of the hospital, in and out of the clinic. Nobody thinks he's getting his drugs. The mom's not following through. He's not, you know, the negative Johnny view. Well, technology has a way that on top of an inhaler, you can drop a little GPS thing to know where little Johnny is, when he's using his inhaler, and how many times he's using it at what time of day, which is really helpful for the clinical record, for the docs to say, oh, well, they really are, you know, he really is following through. Maybe we don't need to escalate the dose, or maybe we do need to escalate the dose or adjust the meds. But imagine if the public health, local public health department, and the providers are worried about it, because maybe little Johnny's uninsured, or maybe he's run out of Medicaid visits, or he's run out of whatever. So they're worried about that strain, and they don't have access to their clinic because they're clogged. What if all the little Johnnies in Julie's, in the community, you had, you know, you're a mapping person, roll all that data up,
yep,
blinded, into a map, and you give it to the local public health department, who then goes and says, wow, this is all this is happening at the same, I'll pick on a school, the same school.
Absolutely.
And, well, why don't we just go with work with the schools and do an environmental assessment and understand that actually they've got an infestation problem or they've got a mold problem. Individual providers can't know all that data. The public health department doesn't get that data because it doesn't exist, but it is technologically feasible. It could reduce some of the burden on the providers, and it would help. The public health has the tools and the relationships to actually advance here, and little Donnie might get better. And it may be happening one day in this country. Right now in this country, I don't know, but it all exists, and if it could be put together, maybe they could do something concrete like that and think about ways, not necessarily with asthma, but I just happen to know it exists. So I just, well, anyway, I guess I get excited about it. But there, and I would also say that this point, it's in my DNA to advance equity,
yes,
and to be inclusive. I grew up in public health clinics. That's where I got my care. And I'm a doctor today because of the National Health Service Corps. And they funded school, and I did my payback. So all this is really, when I'm thinking of the world, I'm thinking of the world, and the tent is being inclusive. I'm thinking about raising the floor. I'm thinking about everybody comes along. There's not a divide. And data and information is so democratizing. So everything that we're building and planning and thinking about at ONC is to do it in such a way that it's inclusive and that it's sustainable and that it's affordable. And I don't mean just the cost of care, but the pipes and everything else. So y'all can help me keep straight with that, too, and that would be helpful. I've been here way too long.
Yes. No, well, thank you. This has been phenomenal. You know, I think it you know, laid the groundwork for the conversation going forward. And we just admire your what you've done so far and your fortitude for taking this on and really believe in your capacity to make a difference. So thank you so much.
Thank you guys really very much. I appreciate it.
Next steps. Couple of things. I think we're close to wrapping up at this point. I guess we'll take a break. Goodbye. Well, the goodbye. Okay, great. So, Damon, how was this meeting helpful for you?
Yes. First, for just sort of gauging initial enthusiasm for some of the activities that we're going to be engaged in across the Health Data Initiative, but also in recognizing where we now have an opportunity to continue the conversation. So I envision these future meetings being more focused conversations on varied aspects of the Health Data Initiative, in my opinion. And so I would love to be able to bring things like the strategically relevant data conversation here, or other efforts.
That's great.
So, yes.
The next meeting of this group is in September. If there's things before then, obviously just reach out to Vicki.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is we didn't quite get to go through the health indicators warehouse real-time. I guess we need more technology to make sure that we're internet connected here. But I do think that we need to just keep looking at what we keep talking about,
mm-hmm,
and sort of do a little use case, you know, and maybe love to see the FDA data, and then,
mm-hmm,
we get to see SAMHSA, CMS data. If we just sort of tee up those, one is probably enough, one or two.
Mm-hmm.
So we meet in September, November, February, June,
okay,
are the scheduled meetings. But as I said, we can meet other ones.
Mm-hmm.
The other area I wanted to just touch bases with leadership from NCVHS full committee is the intersection with the committee, the working group. There's a lot of very exciting agenda planned for the year ahead for the full committee, and how would you see the working group fit in? Let me start with Bruce since he has a reaction.
What we were talking about this morning and what we're talking about this afternoon are in the same place. I see the conversations being integrative in a variety of ways. Our focus this morning, Damon, was on having data providers meet communities where they're at in terms of data engagement. So I feel we have a lot to say both from the community perspective and hopefully helping data providers like HHS figure out dissemination strategies to provide information that's usable for communities. So this is just building right on your strategy. So I feel the work is totally in the same spot.
Yeah, and I think that you were out of the room briefly, but when we were talking about the resources, you came back in how to prioritize. We have this community workshop coming up in October that, we ought to be carrying that thread along with all the activities of, and what would this mean for data, data availability, data prioritization. I think it's a big piece. Leslie. No, I wanted to say in your leadership role in privacy, what do you see from the full committee perspective with the working group?
Well, I mean, it seems to me that it's really important to keep thinking about what are the, I'm going to call them technical, but also the kinds of policy questions that we need to think about as data availability goes forward. Because I'm deeply committed to achieving both. And my greatest fear is that if we somehow screw up on the data availability side, yeah, you got it. The example that just comes up over and over and over again in my brain is the Texas and Minnesota debacles about blood spots, which was an enormous loss of a tremendously important public health potential resource. And so, I worry. The dark side of me is really scared that in the enthusiasm of getting it out there, there are going to be some baby and bathwater problems. And so anything I can't design the technology. I can just keep pushing the question.
This is one of the things when we were going to go around the room in reaction to Damon, this is some of the stuff that came up in the earlier material last year, and I put a couple quotes from some of the comp sci people, and even at the HDI tech track, I brought in the Harvard and Hopkins people on the comp sci medical management. And so, part of that session was geared around this, and very specifically, number one, there are, some things worth looking at, not purely synthetic files, but there are very specific comp sci, very common usage, in sensor device, et cetera, where you can present mosaic effect forward thinking and retain statistical integrity at a designated grain. And so that's something we haven't really talked about so much, but that stuff exists. That was the core of that session. So that what you're talking about, there are ways to do that, and that might be worth chatting a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And we did a bit of that last year. And then you can do something totally crazy, too, if you wanted to think outside the box. Again, I keep saying, I want to donate my data for research. I would love a green button where I can, say, have access to it, basically. Wave any and all rights. And as I toy around with this stuff, there's a lot of other people that you might be able to create. Yeah. So my point is there's ways to kind of handle this, both on the technological and on the policy side. I think the core piece of it, if I can say two things, the Damon's piece, the public-private stuff, what we were talking about, getting feedback from the users, I sent you some stuff on that.
Mm-hmm.
All that's interesting, but I think you basically do it yourself internally, relatively easily. There's some very specific things you can do around getting assets and having people comment on it in a very structured way, at least easy technically. So you don't have to do kind of external people's analytics. That's great, but you want to start with your core assets. And then if you do that, you can do some very interesting things around that. Part of which is use means of control to require other people to do the stuff, whether it's funding. So if you're granting funding, let's see the ERD, right? Or actually doing something besides machine readable. So I see machine readable, what's been accepted, and has worked pretty well, is being something like somewhat separate than publishing ERD, publish metadata, and like I would propose that that's something we should like strongly think about. Another piece of legislation around that, like machine readable is great. It is, you know, 2005. Like there's some specific stuff we should be doing on top of that.
Okay. Great. Actually, let's just keep going around the
details around too.
Okay.
Welcome comments, suggestions going forward, or you don't have to.
On me?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'll pass.
Okay.
I may come back.
No, I think I'm really excited by the idea of weaving all this together, because I think I sit in multiple groups and then I see it in one place and another, but they don't end up hitting, and then people say, well, now this isn't happening, and then it is. Mm-hmm. But we're not utilizing things as well as we could across disciplines, across skills, and I think this is where it really gets, this is where it could be exciting in a way that nowhere else is able to pull things together.
So again, I'll have closing comments, Susan, and Bill, Larry. Wait, you're the chair of the full committee.
Of all the problems that beset the U.S. healthcare system, principal among them is fragmentation.
Okay, thank you. Leah.
That was good.
Great. All right. So,
I've spoken my piece.
Okay.
What I was saying is, where are the intersections? That's what I was asking you. But I think we've heard a tremendous amount today, and I know we've got some great note-taking.
Terry and Jim and Debbie and they're on the case right now.
Oh, that's great.
The people are at work on us sorting out what our obligations are and how the Secretary wants to resolve this.
Yeah. So I am leaving, and I am very delighted to have been a part of the first 2 years, and I see a very, very exciting collaboration emerging now, and I really wish you really the very best of luck, and I know it's going to be tremendously successful, and I'll turn it over. Wait, it comes with one of these.
One of those.
All right.
Thanks for Justine.
Kenyon, are you still on?
I'm here.
Do you want to comment before we...
I think this is a really good meeting. It's very exciting, and thank you for all your work, Justine, and looking forward to Vicki bringing her leadership. I was actually in your neck of the woods yesterday at the
Healthy
Data Summit on the UCLA campus where I am today. But I'll say, I agree with everything that's been said. I mean, I think the progress on multiple fronts, but HHS out ahead of the open data business. Wonderful, and we just got to keep pushing on all these things and increase the usability, the effectiveness, and the efficiency for the entire stakeholder community, including, you know, developers, researchers, students, innovators, so the whole gamut. And as this communications plan, which was referenced earlier, it takes more shape, so we'd be happy to sort of reflect on that from the business school marketing perspective. But I think the communication information is going to be key. So it's how you market it, not only how well you build it, if no one knows about it. Sharing that is not going to be as useful. I appreciate you, Justine, bringing it up earlier for the keep pushing on the learning community aspect. That's key, too. I mean, the most innovation is we can facilitate meaningful interactions across these stakeholders and make sure that what's coming out of the system gets shared back into the system. It creates like a feedback loop of knowledge development. I think that idea about just sort of pushing the envelope around a green button or a way that sort of if people want to get sort of relaxed from their privacy restrictions to create sort of more valuable data, so we're okay with that. We can do that in a way that's appropriate, then I think we should continue to push the envelope in that kind of way. So with that, I'll just close there. And thanks, everyone, for your work.
Great. Thank you. Well, one of the things that I think today showed is, you know, we talked earlier in the work group about the integration, and I think it's wonderful, Damon, to have you here and to know that we're going to have you here each time, because I think we're going to be better at helping with the agenda of HHS and, you know, having Karen DeSalvo discuss with us alignment and what have you. So going forth, this will be our expectation that we will, you know, we'll have a call with you before the meeting, try and set up an agenda.
Right.
Get a sense of some of the issues that are on, you know, your list, Jim's list, Greg's list, and then see how it is that we can deal with those in the meeting and bring, you know, we've got some of the best and the brightest here in terms of the minds that are sitting around the table, then to see how we can, you know, be responders.
Mm-hmm.
Our sense is that much of what we're going to do will be kind of within the context of the meeting, and you can kind of call on us in that context, and we'll do as much as we can in, you know, kind of other times for planning. But I think, you know, we're going to kind of use the notes, give feedback, and really try and just take care of your issues as you bring them to us. So we'll be happy to receive your agenda.
Thank you very much. So I think I speak for obviously myself and all of the folks in my office and the health data leads across the department and thanking you guys for your leadership, Justine, especially for your years of leadership here, but especially as we sort of advance the health data initiative. You know, as Karen sort of said, A1C hit an adolescence, and now we're really advancing things, and I think it's thanks to the leadership of folks like yourself, so I really appreciate the offer to continue to be as contributory as you are towards the agenda that we have. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And let's thank Justine for...
Yeah!
Mind-blowing.
Did we just say Kate?
Eye-opening.
We owe you a Kate.
Bourbon.
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to end this meeting at this point because we're trying to talk about bourbon. So we can
thank you.
Bourbon.
Very wise from the
record.
Yes. Yes. Oh,